remind everyone to silence their cell phones. I will still do that, but I will also ask you to remember to mute your computer if you're with us remotely, and so we won't get background noise during the presentations, unless you're the one making the presentation, and then you're welcome to unmute. So we value public input at our meetings and will be providing an opportunity for the public to have input at the end of our morning session and at the end of our afternoon session. If you wish to speak, we ask that you provide your name and address for the record, as our meetings are recorded and we wish to have an accurate record of your input. Our flag salute and safety minute this morning will be brought to us by Cassie Bertelson.
Good morning. Thank you, commissioners. I'll lead you in the Pledge of Allegiance here. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. So good morning. As said, I'm Cassie Bertelson, and I've recently taken on the role of Human Performance Program Manager, and I appreciate the opportunity to present this Human Performance Minute at today's board meeting. So today's topic is regarding psychological safety, which I had actually previously presented as a safety HPI minute at the district's all leadership meeting earlier this spring. But it's something that I feel is critical to advancing our human performance efforts here at the district, so I wanted to share it with all of you here as well. But before I dive into discussing a little bit more about psychological safety, let's quickly review the key points of the district's five HPI principles. So first, we must remember that as human beings, we all make errors. But those errors are predictable as long as we keep seeking to learn from them while utilizing our employees who know best about providing the needed solutions. It is through this continual learning that we can strive for excellence by constantly improving the defenses that help protect us from errors. So how does psychological safety impact these principles and the district's human performance efforts? Let's begin by discussing what exactly is psychological safety. So next slide, please, Rebecca. So I recently started reading a book called The Fearless Organization, which actually defines psychological safety as the belief that the work environment is safe for interpersonal risk-taking. So in other words, we can describe it as creating a safe space for people to interact where they won't be punished or humiliated for sharing concerns, ideas, or questions, or even for making mistakes. But as we start thinking a bit deeper about how we can create this sense of candor here throughout the district, I want to clarify that psychological safety is different than what some folks think of as simply either camaraderie or a warm and fuzzy place to work. But instead, it's about building that emotional capacity for taking risks where we can constructively contradict one another. Next slide, please. So as leaders, we must first start with our own emotional capacities because it is what we demonstrate that what signals to those that we work with, it's safe to take those emotional risks. And if we don't convey or communicate that we feel comfortable speaking up or even making mistakes, then how do we expect the same of our employees? Additionally, we must constantly be aware and vigilant of the psychological safety we create or endorse in every meeting and team situation. As naturally and as often as our individual moods change throughout the day, so too can the psychological safety of our teams shift, as it is our response that matters when we manage each of the questions, the conflicts, interactions, and especially the mistakes that arise on a day-to-day basis. So it's essential that we continually create that safe environment where we're able to challenge ourselves and each other through intellectual disagreements, because it is through this type of cognitive conflict that we improve our ability to innovate and advance. We need to shift our mindset from know-it-all to learn-it-all, and embrace that no matter how much we think we know, there will always be more to discover and understand. Effective learning and collaboration is based on differences, not sameness, and possibilities are maximized through multiple lenses of perspective and diversity, which help us to evolve and adapt to changes and errors in our organizational environment. Next slide, please. So my previous request for the district's leadership team and my ask of each of you today is that you reflect on psychological safety throughout this meeting and each meeting moving forward. And I challenge each of you to show yourselves and each other that not only is it acceptable to speak up and share your concerns, ideas, questions, and even your mistakes, but that all members of Chelan County PUD welcome and appreciate it too. By actively generating this culture of psychological safety, we can create that radical transparency necessary for deeper and continued learning from our employees in order to build upon the resiliency of our systems to protect from inevitable errors. Thanks again, and remember to think and respond safely.
Wow, that was deep. Commissioners, it generated a couple of thoughts on my part, but if commissioners, any comments? Steve.
I really appreciated the challenge, and so much that I would ask Rebecca to order a copy of that book for me. I'd like to read that.
I was going to say I'd be happy to share my copy, but I'm not quite done with it.
Don't order just one. You know that what you asked of us today, which just hit me square as we're in the meeting, is to be an emotional risk taker.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's a powerful. How do I say it, step for any individual to take. And that really, I'll be thinking about that for quite some time. So thank you for stirring my thought process this morning.
Happy to help.
All right.
Gary. I'd like to chime in and request a copy of this myself. I'd love to read it. I think all the board members might like to read it. It should be part of our board budget to buy this book for all of us. It definitely is stimulating to think about the potential of essentially unlinking from the standard way of not only thinking but doing. And what ushers in is a whole new concept of creativity. So it's actually quite exciting. And I'm anxious to read the book. So thank you very much, Cassandra. See, you really brought up a terrific topic today. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And the homework wasn't intended, but it is much appreciated. So I thank each one of you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that safety minute. That was unique amongst a lot of unique safety moments. So thank you.
I was going to just share... The last school district that I was a principal in got to the first retreat, and the superintendent spent the first 45 minutes talking about being open and honest and transparent, and just opened up the whole environment for, kind of freewheeling and creative correspondence. We took our first break, went out on the deck, and had a cup of coffee in the senior administrator in the district, Wiley, a little bit elderly, assistant principal came over and sat down next to me and said, "Hey, do you mind if I help you out a little bit?" And I said, "No, go ahead." And he said, "Trust me, you've said enough for a year." Just the complete opposite of psychological safety. And he turned out to be true. So I appreciate what you brought to us this morning and the concept of psychological safety and what it does for the benefit of an organization. And so thank you very much. Appreciate it. And thanks for putting up my story.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me today. Take care, everyone.
Thank you. So commissioners, we have before us an agenda. There's been no recommendation for any changes in the agenda. So if there's no objection, we will just move forward with the agenda as it is presented to us. At this time, I would, however, like to say if there's any member of the public that wishes to speak to any item on this morning's agenda or any part of the agenda, that they, if they could make that request now for the board consideration, before we move forward.
Randy.
Yep. Yes, Steve.
I thought I read somewhere that we were considering items 12 and 13 for consent.
Actually, not so. I think I circled back with management this morning with Steve, and everything is going to remain on the regular agenda.
Thank you.
Okay. Hearing no request, I will hand off conduct of the meeting to Steve Wright.
Thank you. Commissioners, I did, at the request of Willard Field, want to call to your attention something I think is pretty important. You have commented in the past about the fact that he's putting out a weekly summary of key events, and it turns out that this week is probably the most significant week in terms of the entire year relative to the PUD. This is the 91st anniversary of the vote by the people of Washington State to create, through Initiative 1, the Public Utility District Law. And it turns out it is also the 85th anniversary of the PUD being formed under that new state law. So you probably couldn't have two more significant events than that in our history, and just wanted to bring that to your attention and the public's attention.
Well, Steve, in addition to that, and you captured what I had forgotten to say, but it's also, I think, the 46th year anniversary of another public vote in Chelan County to direct the PUD to get into the sewer business. That happened in 1975 on general election day.
I don't have that in Willard's summary. I'll have to check on that.
I think it was in his email, because I did go through it, and that one caught me off guard, that it was a vote of the public by like 58% for us to move into the sewer business.
Good.
Yep. Just for what it's worth.
Okay, with that, we are ready to jump into the agenda. Agenda item 3 is the quarterly update of the district performance plan. You all are familiar with this, that we do this by exception, things that have changed since the last quarter. And we do this by managing director, who's responsible for a specific item. We have, I believe, at least one person standing in for a managing director today, and Jacob, who will be standing in for Kirk. With that, I think we will get going, and our first one is Justin.
Good morning, Commissioners. Justin Erickson, Managing Director of District Services. I do have the first one under the first strategic objective, which is commit to the highest level of customer owner satisfaction. My item specifically is related to our public power benefit program and presentation to the board to select projects for 2022. This is marked blue. It could probably also very legitimately be marked green because we have an ongoing process. But you might recall back in June, we did select projects for 2022. There is, however, $1.5 million remaining, and we have an ongoing PPB solicitation effort in process. So I look forward to connecting again with the board late this year or early next year to allocate those remaining funds and also talk about 2023 funding. Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Jacob Morgan. I'm the business manager for Generation and Transmission. First time I got a chance to speak to you all. Been here about 10 months so far. So I appreciate the opportunity to represent Kirk and team. The first one we have here for Generation is the Discovery Center getting completed. It was past the original date, but still turned out to be a beautiful facility, and I think you've all had a chance to take a look at that, so something we're really proud of.
Morning, Commissioners. John Stoll, I have the next one. That's on our strategy to engage the county in revising the franchise agreement. That's in a caution status right now, just simply due to competing priorities and where this stands.
And I have the next one. It is about a long-term plan for Rondo River Park. You will actually hear more about our progress with the port later on this morning with the parks update. But we do have an agreement near finalization. The negotiations with the port have gone well, and I will say further comment for later this morning if you have more questions during that update. Thank you.
This is Jacob again, HRI. We've been in discussions for a new participant. We've got a few that we're talking to, but have not signed anybody yet. So we've gone yellow at this point. I'm still optimistic we can get somebody on board by end of year.
Hello, this is Sean Smith, Managing Director of Energy Resources. We have completed incorporating the feedback for our low-income program. As you know, you voted to implement this program starting next year. So that program is proceeding as planned.
It's Jacob back again. Next four, we're going to skip one of them. No change on one coming up here. But C3 did go into service the end of September, which is great, getting the units back online. I'll skip the C4 because that's really no change from last quarter. But for the complete and return C5, which we changed to C6, which I believe you're aware of, that one is yellow just based on we've lost float in the schedule. So we're still on shooting for the target by the end of December there. But again, float is kind of lost at this point. So we're just staying focused there. Next is B4. That returned to service in August. We are working with Honors on some performance guarantees that haven't been achieved thus far, but the unit is in service. And then the next one for first unit GMP amendment, that's for the Rock Island Powerhouse 2 modernization effort. That did get signed. It just got signed after the original date that we were targeting, but we are on our way with that project as well.
Commissioners, John Stoll again. I have the next one on the construct the expansion projects for the fiber. That's put into a yellow status primarily because as we close out year end, there's some last minute easements and some material availability that are a little bit challenging. Good news is though, the bulk of the make ready work on the electric system has been completed. And again, we're just down to some easements we're trying to obtain for the fiber system, as well as some procurement challenges.
Commissioners, I have the next eight items. The first three are related to Rock Island relicensing, first of which is finalized our project economics model. That has now been completed. We did not hit the June target, but did complete it later in the summer. The second item is related to an early action effort in the Horan Natural Area. We had a target to complete that study in September. We did complete it in September, but not quite on September 1st. So we're having some internal discussions, some ongoing conversations with the Audubon Society as well, and we look forward to providing you an update, comprehensive update on the Horan area and our work later this year. And lastly, under relicensing is complete the initial consultation document and begin formal work groups. That was completed on time. And we have a stakeholder meeting on October 14th. So relicensing is strongly underway now. Moving into some facilities updates. Rock Island facilities construction complete. That was completed after the deadline. We are substantially complete. I think the only thing outstanding is a couple of pieces of equipment that are still in process because of long lead times and supply chain challenges. But we are occupying those buildings and they're working well for us. Rocky Reach construction, this was changed to yellow. However, I just reviewed the time frame, and I think we're going to be able to hit that December 1st target and have substantial completion for CM22 and CM24. So that's good news there. And bottom of the page, service center construction. We had a goal to top out the structures behind Building A by December 1st. We now know that we will not hit that time frame for a variety of reasons, including some supply chain challenges, labor challenges, and some cultural resource matters. So we will be taking a hard look at that schedule and be updating that in the 2022 performance plan. Next two items center around the redevelopment of our existing headquarters campus here on Fifth Street. We are engaged intently with the port. We have had a surprising amount of interest in our property. And so we are looking at perhaps a way to accelerate our RFP development and official review process and solicitation process with prospective developers. So that second note on the second item there that will, where it notes that it will move out to quarter two or quarter three, I actually think we're going to be able to accelerate that. And I'll have a new time frame for you at the next update. And look forward to bringing you some prospects on this property so that we can redevelop this and positively contribute to downtown Wenatchee as we move out to the service center site in about a year.
Commissioners, Jacob Morgan, Community Outreach for Plain Lake Wenatchee. First two alternatives involve a complete rebuild between the Anderson Canyon and Coles Corner, along with a new switch yard at Coles Corner. A third alternative was brought into the conversation that's about half the cost. So that has extended the business case analysis process into next year, along with the community outreach.
Commissioners, John Stoll again. I have the next several. The first one is the review of the reliability targets and update. That has happened. I believe you saw it in an earlier budget presentation where we recalibrated those targets for the next 5 years. The next one has to do with inspecting our transmission and distribution lines. We had a goal of 300. 328 were inspected by that deadline. And the last one down on the next page has to do with the energizing the new substation out there in Old Station, the Omi Station. We had a plan to energize that by the end of Q3. Now that is by the end of Q4. Right now they are doing just essentially punch list items and final review.
Commissioners, this item is execution of 80% of capital plans on schedule and within budget. And you'll see that it's moved to yellow at 75.5%. So we're fairly close to the 80% target. The big driver here is really timing with facilities work and when those invoices are reviewed and approved. And so I do think there's a good chance that we'll hit that 80% target based on our average monthly spend for both the service center project and Rocky Reach facilities. And I have the next couple as well. Operating at seasonal fish spill targets. We went through another spill season and successfully operated at our targets, so that is now marked as complete. And on the bottom of the page, we have done our second year of our three-year bull trout pit tank study, and so that is also marked as complete. And we'll give you some more information about that bull trout study at an upcoming quarterly fish and wildlife update. And the next two are mine as well. A complete survival study for Rock Island that is complete. We delivered the good news that we met and actually exceeded our standard. And on the second item, complete study design for Rocky Reach. You might also recall that we decided to defer that study into 2023 based on unit outages. So what we're gonna do then is just shift everything by 1 year. So we'll work in 2022 to complete the study design and select a contractor, and then follow that up the following year in 23 with the actual study.
Hello, Sean here. Again, I've got the next five. The Northwest Power Pool RA program. We completed the forward showing operational program and also the document, the RA governance too, if you go scroll down further. So those are now complete. Going down further, our real-time agreement, we have decided with our current staffing, we're gonna extend the current PowerX program agreement 1 year and then renegotiate. So that has changed from the multi-year agreement to a 1 year. So it shows red. We did submit at least two bids into capacity markets for the year, frequency response. So that shows complete now. If you go down further, the last one, the headwater benefit strategy. We're working for understanding the methodology, but nothing, we're not going to reach our 12-1 target there for gaining agreement with the headwater benefit strategy.
Commissioners, this is Jacob. Next one is just the completion of the TDIP Phase 2 business case. Leave that after the targeted date.
Good morning, Commissioners. It's Kelly Boyd, Chief Financial and Risk Officer. And I have the next three, starting with 413A. And both A and B relate to our ongoing outreach with our rating agencies. We have completed our kind of annual report that we provide. We just did that via email this year, nothing in person, and answered any questions, follow-up questions that there were. And then we also conducted our benchmarking against our peers. And both of these items have us continuing to perform as a highly rated AA plus entity. And then moving down to 415A is the first milestone of the business planning process. And we did complete the first piece of that cycle by having our first round of the business planning completed. And since this has been produced, we've also completed the next couple steps. And we'll be moving on to the last leg of that cycle, which is the budget that you'll hear this afternoon.
Hello, Commissioners. John Stoll again. I have the next one. We had a goal to present to the board the standardized proportional share of infrastructure, mainly on the electrical, but also we wrapped in adjustments to both water and wastewater. That was presented, and currently we're in the public outreach effort and anticipate coming back to the board near the end of the year with our findings and recommendations.
Jacob Morgan, operating expense for hydro did a bit of a drop, as you can see here in Q3, largely driven by schedules of projects either getting deferred to later in the year or into next year, just getting behind schedule. Reviewing the project schedules and working with the PMs, we do expect to get back to 90% by the year end, but we'll continue to monitor that going forward.
This is John. I have the next one. This simply reflects the wastewater operating expenses shifting out of the caution to the range of on track.
Good morning, Commissioners. Rhonda Wilkinson, Director of Safety and Human Performance. The first item that I'll be talking about is the OSHA recordable cases. So in third quarter, the district had an additional 11 OSHA recordables. While completing the annual hearing test, five of those tests resulted in hearing loss OSHA recordable cases. There's also been the line of fire injury type events were under lacerations and abrasions that required medical care. And there were also two slip trip events where individuals had lost their balance, fell, and which resulted in the instantaneous strains and sprains. And then additionally, there were a couple of cases that occurred back in February and June that then became OSHA recordable once medical treatment was sought.
Good morning, Commissioners. This is Rosario Nystrom, Managing Director of Human Resources. The next goal was for us to get Managing Director guidance for planning leadership development program. And we were able to complete this goal, but we were unable to meet the deadline that we had, which was 6:30. And we were not able to meet the goal due to a focus that we had in developing a curriculum for job groups.
Commissioners, this is Rhonda Wilkinson again. I'll have the next two. So the first one is completing arc flash labeling and competent person training by 12-1. So even though the analysis for the arc flash labeling is anticipated to be completed by 12-1, we may actually miss that target date to perform the actual physical labeling due to staffing constraints. But on a positive note, the competent person training for the water wastewater group is on track and it will be completed by mid-November. And then the next one is around the competent person training for all remaining areas for the arc flash training. And so there are just over 300 employees that will need this arc flash training. So even though we will be missing that target date of 12-1 to get all 300 employees through, we are starting that training starting this month, and then we will keep continuing through into this next year to complete all of that training.
Morning, Commissioners. Ian Fitzgerald, Chief Technology Officer. This item deals with the execution of our CIS stability milestones. We actually completed our development in August with testing and full rollout into production on September 25th. A few months ahead of schedule.
Commissioners, I have the next one. That's on the finalizing the district automated metering infrastructure communication plan and associated materials. Just we were delayed a bit due to the length of the contract and working with the vendor, but we're actively putting those materials together and we'll have those ready as we start rolling out for the project next year.
Commissioners, Ian Fitzgerald again, I have the next two. The first one is completion of district-wide GIS business process improvement. We actually have had a contractor who have come in and completed the interviews and the assessment with district staff. This project is completed. We're just now waiting on the final document delivery in the next week. The second one has to do with the accuracy, that's actually the mobile app current. This project is currently set to yellow as it's been sort of bumped by our priorities with AMI, OMS, and our HPI enable on projects sort of getting a higher precedence right now. We plan to relook at this in first and second quarter next year to see where it fits within that prioritization.
And the next item is 77A, and that is implementing a generation and transmission dashboard. With a key operational metrics on it that are those early indicators that people can just look at and see if something is going awry. So we did not complete this by the deadline at the end of the quarter, but we are making really good progress on it, and we do expect it to complete it just a little bit after the deadline. So things are going well on this important project.
Commissioners, the Fitzgerald again, I have the next three. The first one is completion of phase two of our Microsoft Teams collaboration. This project, this phase was actually completed late in August. The next phase is the phase three of that same collaboration tool that actually integrates our phone services. This is set to yellow right now based off of a number of requests coming in to how we want the phone systems to work, and it's changed the scope a little bit. But the project is still rolling forward, but it may not be complete by year's end. And then finally, the complete upgrade of migration of our SharePoint Online. This is moving this product from an on-premise to a cloud environment. We've run into some problems with a translation tool to translate the information from that on-premise to offline. And this is causing this project to be delayed, and it's now scheduled to be completed in April of 2022.
This is Sean again. I'll finish up the last two here. This is the solar program marketing to customers. We are turned to yellow right now because we've shifted focus on a model development schedule model that's helping us determine the value of bringing on resources within the district. And then next, investigate and report on feasibility of new potential energy resources. We did an initial review, and that was completed here, but we are, again, with the CRS model, delving deeper into the subject additionally. Thank you.
Okay, and that is our full report. You can see at the bottom that we are at about 72% of projects that are on track, completed on schedule, or completed after the deadline. That's a little bit below our historical average and substantially above our 2020, which I think kind of fits a year in which we're still dealing with COVID. That's where we stand. Any questions or comments from the board?
Commissioners, any questions? Go ahead, Steve.
Okay, then we'll move on to the next agenda item, which is fitting. Follows up on the overall performance plan. We'll talk about the quarterly financial review and investment update. Mark Mullins will provide this.
Great. Thank you, Steve. Wait for the presentation to come up. This is a good time for a sound check.
Sounds good, Mark.
Great. Thank you. Coming up here shortly. Very good. Thank you. So good morning, commissioners. This is Mark Mullins, Director, Enterprise Planning, Risk, and Analytics. And today I'll be presenting the quarterly financial review for quarter ended September 30th, 2021. This presentation does support a number of resolutions that require quarterly reporting to the board on compliance with our long-range financial policies, business line financial policies, and our investment policy, as well as the board's balanced scorecard objective of maintaining strong financial stewardship. So today we're going to cover the financial highlights, third quarter results, take a look at our five-year forecast, a brief look at our investment report, and leave you with some key messages. This is an update only, no action required today. You did have additional information in the appendix, but we won't be covering that today. So looking at our Q3 2021 key highlights, bottom line results through Q3 is $84 million, better than budget by $44 million. So higher revenue from our retained surplus proceeds and lower operating costs are the major drivers with those strong results year-to-date through Q3. From a forecast perspective, forecasting to end the year at $98 million or $46 million better than budget. Our higher operating revenues are expected to continue for the year. And our capital and O&M projects still reflect heavy spending through the remainder of the year, but we'll continue to refine those as we always do as we move through the course of the year. Definitely some significant projects that are well underway. From a financial metrics perspective, we are meeting our targets with planned borrowing in 2023 to fund a portion of our capital program, and the COVID-19 financial impacts continue to be manageable. So at this time, continuing to stay the course with our 2020 through 2024 strategic plans. So looking at the income statement from a revenue perspective, you'll see some red arrows down, meaning that we're below budget, and some green arrows up, indicating that we're better than budget. Just to anchor everyone to the slide deck on this page. So service revenue is right in line with budget. We're seeing our largest retail load is slightly lagging on the HDL side at 69% usage. Commercial sales are slightly down with COVID-related load impacts as well as some milder winter temperatures earlier in the year. Offsetting that, we are seeing our off-system end-use sale. The volume is down, but our average market price rate component is higher. So overall, right in line with budget for service revenue. On the net wholesale revenue side, $1 million below budget. We do have some a couple of moving components there as well. Lower energy production coming in at about 90% with lower stream flow, as well as offsetting that. We do have more energy available to sell due to the lower retail usage that I was describing earlier. And we also have stronger market prices that are benefiting that as well. From our hydro contract revenue, $21 million above budget. We are recognizing through Q3 $25 million of retained surplus proceeds on our cost-based contract. That's partially offset by our hydro O&M costs are lower, which has an impact on those revenues as well. On the other operating revenue, $4 million above budget, which is primarily due to the benefits of the variable portion of our real-time agreement being better than budget by $3.2 million. So forecasted for the year through Q3, forecasted to end the year at $32 million above budget. By comparison of Q2, we are forecasting to end the year at $17 million above budget. So a $15 million delta, primarily driven by the surplus proceeds that we retained in Q3. From an operating expense perspective, the green arrow down is showing that we're below budget, but it does have a bottom line benefit. So operating expenses, $18 million below budget. At this point in time, hydro O&M, about 79% of spend. We are expecting to catch up on some of those costs through the remainder of the year, coming in at 95% based on this Q3 forecast. On the non-operating net expense, $1 million better than budget, primarily due to line extension contributions. And for the year, net expenditures are forecasted to be $14 million below budget for the year. By comparison in Q2, we are expected to be $2 million below budget. So our expenditures are falling a little bit behind, but that's a $12 million delta, which is an improvement to our bottom line as well. So from a bottom line perspective, $84 million year to date through Q3, $44 million better than budget. As mentioned, the higher contract, higher hydro contract revenues associated with surplus proceeds and the combination of lower expenses are driving that variance better than budget. From a forecast perspective, $98 million for the year or $46 million better than budget. So looking at the capital side or the balance sheet and looking at our capital expenditures through Q3, we've spent $95 million year to date or $34 million below budget, about 73% of spend. You can see we have a number of forecast adjustments going forward as we move throughout the year with our total capital forecast at this point in time through Q3 expected to come in at $176 million or $16 million below budget. So we're still forecasting based on what we know through Q3, some pretty aggressive spending going forward. But as I mentioned before, we continue to refine those schedules over time.
Mark?
Yes.
Is that capital budget the largest since the construction of Rocky Reach Dam, what we're spending?
Yes, I believe it was when we set that budget, correct.
Thank you.
A pretty significant capital budget that we had for 2021. From a cash perspective, ending Q3 with a balance of $540 million. This is a $131 million drawdown from our year-end balance of $671 million as we continue to utilize our cash to pay for planned capital spending as well as our scheduled debt reductions. Forecasted in the year at $496 million or $61 million better than budget. From a debt perspective, our Q3 balance is $405 million. And as we continue to execute on our continuation of our 2020 debt refinance and the retirements that we delayed into 2021, we're expected to end the year at $396 million from a debt perspective. So looking at our 2021 bottom line results from a forecast perspective, you can see service revenue is up primarily due to that market-based component of our off-system revenue, end-use sale. Net wholesale revenue right in line with budget. We have the surplus proceeds associated with our hydro long-term contract revenue and then the real-time agreement showing some benefits on our other operating revenue. As mentioned, we're forecasted to be at about 95% on our O&M. And depreciation is right in line with budget. So from a bottom line perspective, on the forecast for 2021, $98.3 million. Looking at our bottom line from a business line results, so you can see the primary driver is our integrated electric business coming in significantly above budget. We also have slightly higher revenues and slightly lower operating expenditures on the fiber and telecom, which is driving that improvement. Similarly, a little bit lower O&M on the water business. And then we have the intersystem eliminations that's showing, just representing our make-ready port for the fiber acceleration business. Again, combined bottom line, $98.3 million. So looking specifically at capital expenditures, so looking at electric distribution, coming in fairly much in line with budget through Q3, but forecasted to be about 78% through the remainder of the year. We do have some substation work that's getting pushed out into 2022 and 2023. We can see on Rocky Reach coming in at about 84% forecasted for the year. We do have some crane work that's getting pushed out into 23, as well as some spillway electrical work as well. I would like to note on Rock Island, showing 66% of spend year to date, and some pretty aggressive schedule or spending through the remainder of the year at 97%. However, just would like to note that we continue to refine those schedules through October, November, and December, and we do expect we'll see some refinements on that schedule going forward. Lake Chelan, a 23% of spend, and we can forecast it, and we expect that to continue that way. There was a project related to the auto closure gate at Lake Chelan, and that's been delayed due to a FERC requirement that we do a probability failure mode assessment and analysis, and that analysis has been completed, but we expect that project to move forward into 2022 as well. The internal services forecasted to be at 94%. This includes our operations and service center, as well as the Rocky Reach central maintenance. On the fiber and telecom, we are showing slightly over budget at this point in time, and this is something that we've been monitoring over time throughout the year, and you'll be hearing about a budget revision coming to the board in the afternoon that Bob Shane will be presenting. Well, from an overall perspective, forecasted to spend about $176 million, about 91% of spend. And year to date, we're at 73%. From a cash flow perspective, our bottom line results of $84 million, adding back in depreciation, our non-cash related items, estimated earned funds from operations, $119 million. As mentioned, we've spent $95 million on capital. And with our net debt activity of $110 million, and then the net impact of our change in accounts receivable and accounts payable, estimated use of funds, $250 million. So we are drawing down our cash reserves of $131 million, down to a balance of $540 million through Q3. Looking at our cash and investments balance through Q3, we have total unrestricted funds of $317 million. This does include the board designated funds of $50 million associated with our operations and service center. Our plan at this point is we would leverage those funds starting in 2022 after we pay down some of the construction funds associated with that particular project that you'll see in our restricted funds down below. We also have $104 million in our restricted funds related to our hydro capital and debt, with our debt recovery charge and debt reduction charge and capital recovery charge, again, ending the quarter at $540 million. So looking at our financial policies and our district level district metrics, you can see the yellow is indicating that we're within 10% of that metric. So you'll see in liquidity, our plan is to that we would issue external debt starting in 2023 as we continue to fund a portion of our capital program. I do want to point out that although we are issuing, or at least planning based on the forecast to issue debt, our debt ratio continues to go down through the entirety of the five-year forecast. Similarly, within 10% on days cash on hand, and then our combined debt service coverage, you can see our strong results there, with over three times in 23, 24, and 25. And we saw an improvement in 2022 as well as we started moving some of the Rocky Reach large unit projects out to 23 and 24.
Mark, another question.
Yes.
The numbers going forward, 23, 4, and 5, have you already factored in the change from this year's outside sales?
I'm sorry, I may not be following. Outside sales, referring to?
Well, not outside, but in we're above budget this year by virtue of the sales we've had into the marketplace. Those correct. Numbers are already factored in going forward?
Yes, those are already included in our forecast, correct. Yep, in our actual results and our forecast going forward.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Next slide, please. And looking at our financial metrics from a business line perspective, this is the forecast for 2024. Which is by resolution is our measurement point. So just wanted to point out a couple of things moving left to right. On the water side, the yellow is indicating that we are meeting the metric, but we're within 10%. We are not meeting the metric on water based on our cash reserves. And that's primarily due to the timing of capital. And we may be able to leverage some of our excess room that we have on the debt service to issue internal loans to remedy that metric if we need to. On the wastewater side, we are not meeting that metric in 2024 on the operating coverage percentage, primarily due to some of the increased O&M costs for the Dryden facility was not factored in at the time we set those targets. Our cash reserves are strong for water. However, our debt service is not meeting the metric as we include the Peshastan loan included in that metric. So at some point in time, we may be able to leverage some of that cash to pay down that loan, but the Dryden project is still being worked on and still trying to finalize the funding portion of that. So that'll be a future decision at some point down the road with respect to those two metrics. On the fiber side, within 10%, but otherwise meeting the metric for the operating coverage percentage. So looking at our quarterly investment report, our Q3 yield is 2.08%, a slight improvement over where we were at in Q2. And just by comparison, our 2021 budgeted rate is 2.17%. We are compliant and meeting all of our policy objectives on the through Q3. So Q3 key messages, year-end 21 forecasts are better than budget. The Q3 year-to-date results better than budget by $44 million, with our year-end forecasts anticipating higher revenues and then some catch-up in the operating expenses, which will improve bottom-line results slightly, being better than budget coming in at $98 million, better than budget by $46 million, based on what we know today through Q3. On our long-term financial metrics, they do remain strong, and that does include borrowing in the next five-year plan to fund a portion of our capital spending program, but expected to maintain our financial metrics. So at this point in time, expected to stay the course with our 2020 through 2024 strategic plan, and COVID-19 impacts have been manageable year to date. So no changes at this point in time. And with that, I'll open it up to see if there's any additional questions.
Commissioners, any questions? Thank you, Mark. Another good report, as usual. You do a great job of keeping us up to date. We appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you very much, Commissioner. Appreciate that. We'll see you this afternoon for the budget.
Okay.
Yeah, Randy, this is Commissioner Congdon. Yeah, Mark, I just wanted to chime in and say, too, I always appreciate your reports. You're very thorough and explain things really well. It's always really clear for me now, finally. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that feedback.
Hey, Steve.
All right, so next up, another quarterly report. This will be on the load growth update. Chad Rissman, Andy Wendell will be doing this presentation.
Good morning, Commissioners. This is the quarterly electric load update. With me is my colleague, Chad Rissman, and Andy Wendell, the Director of Customer Service. Lisa, I'm going to ask you if you would advance the slides for us today. You know when or Rebecca, either one. Okay. Typical format that we generally follow on these updates. We'll take a look at some of the growth trends that we've seen through the year in 2021. We'll look at the load forecast in terms of annual average megawatts and what projections we have there. We always like to take a look at some of the large projects or project areas of interest. We'll do that today, and Chad will give us an update on the various substations going on around the county, and maybe a few other capital improvement projects. There is no action requested of the board today. This is information only, but we always like to have your questions. Next slide. And there's a photo of the Cashmere Mill property. It's one of the newer tenants on that property out in Cashmere. Some of the growth observations that we've seen throughout the year is that new residential construction tends to be the focus for new development across the county and all the municipalities, excuse me, as well as throughout the county area. Although there's a lot of single family residential developments, we're also seeing a handful of multifamily construction. This is moderate to high in comparison to what we've seen over the last 10 years. As with many industries, the material availability, particular electric supplies, rubber goods, conduit, those types of things. Material availability has been a challenge, and as well as some labor resources. And talking with some of our developers, they still have high level of confidence in completing projects and developments in construction, but it's a matter of timing. Some of the construction has slowed down a bit by material availability. We are seeing interest in new commercial development as well throughout the county. There are inquiries about new hotel locations and some retail spaces. The next slide is some information we pulled from the county planning website. I thought it would be interesting information to share with the board today. The upper portion of the slide shows county residential housing units, and those first two lines are the total housing units in comparison to homes that are occupied in Chelan County, and then comparing that with Washington State in general. That first top line, you can see that Chelan County has an occupancy for residential homes at about 75% in comparison to Washington State at 91.5%. And this is an indicator, I think we all kind of know this, but this is an indicator that shows there's likely a higher percentage of second homes or residential homes or vacation homes here in Chelan County in comparison to this entire state. And then the bottom half of this slide shows the breakdown of the different residential building types and the percent allocation for those. And of course, Chelan County has about 71, almost 72% single family residential homes. So our total is 18.2 residential homes are apartment styles in Chelan County, and compared to a little over 26% statewide. So multifamily housing generally have a smaller allocation, but we are seeing trends in more multifamily housing in the county. Talking with developers, we would anticipate that ratio to close a bit. The next slide just simply shows a history of going back in prior to 1940 of the percent growth in Chelan County for residential homes in comparison to the state of Washington. I think there is a typo in the 1940 to 1959. This is information pulled directly from the county building department. Nevertheless, you can see that our primary growth in the county was, you know, around that 1960 to 1990 timeframes where we saw those large percent increases. Interesting enough, the bulk of the distribution electric system was built during that time frame, much of it reaching the end of its useful life today. But that said, the growth trends that we're seeing today are very manageable in comparison to what we've seen in the past in Chelan County's history. The next slide is just a breakdown of the applications that we receive from our customers year to date for 2020. That includes electric at around just under 800 new applications. You can see it's broken down by the type of application. I just point out that electrical applications other are just in they're in process. They'll go into one of the categories, either residential, commercial, or development. So that's quite a few applications, but it's pretty par for what we've been seeing and what we're projecting. Wastewater is a total of 11 new applications, one being commercial this year. That's an increase. That's a significant increase in what we've seen in years past. And as well as our water system with over 100 new applications this year. The next slide is an example of what we try to find out from some of the planning groups. This happens to be City of Chelan planning group shared this information with us, and we sit down and talk with them about the timing of these events. And what you're seeing here is essentially all the active developments going on within the city limits of Chelan area. Now, of course, we know that there's a lot going on in Manson and the rest of the South Shore, also a little bit in Chelan Falls, but these are specific to the city of Chelan. There's 17 developments here with all completed over 400 new residential units. So this information is fed into our models for our load growth and our load forecasting. And with all of these developments, at this point in time, we do have a high level of confidence that they will come to fruition and those loads will appear within the next 10-year time frame. The next slide just shows a few other areas. This is an area that there are both private and public entities working at repurposing properties, not just here in Wenatchee, but we see that happening to some degree in the other municipalities as well. But the three we'll be focused on over the next 2 or 3 years are shown on the slide. The Lineage property, which is located west of the Pybus across the tracks. You can see in the photo there that yellow shaded area. It's a lot of existing buildings, but some will remain and be repurposed. Other ones may be demolished and new infrastructure, new buildings, office space, commercial come into that particular area. Also, we heard Justin Erickson talk about the 5th and Wenatchee Avenue property. There, the Chelan County PUD headquarters, and we do anticipate there being some load shifts associated with that new development coming in the near future, as well as the North Wenatchee project shown in the upper right-hand corner. The city has been involved in developing the new North Columbia Street, which runs north and south from Save Mart down to the old Washington State Department of Transportation property. We'll see a new road in there, as well as the McKittrick Street extension, which will extend across Wenatchee Avenue and into the area of Holly Street and North Miller Street. There'll be significant development happening over the next 10 years, in addition to changing and adding new electric loads in those particular areas. So we'll be keeping a close eye on those and bringing you more information as those developments come to fruition. The next slide is the electric meters installed through September of 2021. You can see to date, we're at 416 residential electric meters. We're at 50 new commercial meters and then one industrial or high density load. I will say that this is dated up through September, and I have information to suggest that we had a significant amount of residential meters set in the month of October already. So we do anticipate meeting the projected range of around 800 new electric meters this year. The next and last slide before I turn it over to Chad is the 10-year load forecast. Just as a reminder, this is net of energy conservation plans. So this we would see load growth, our conservation offsets that, and this is what we anticipate as a result. These are shown in annual average megawatts, and these would be incremental increases over our existing loads. So essentially, we are looking at the bottom line there. Our current forecast for October 21 would be 1.4% load growth for a total of 31 average megawatts over the next 10-year horizon. We also have a high case at 107 average megawatts and a low case at 16 average megawatts. You will notice the change from July at 23.5 average megawatts to our current forecast at 31. And essentially, this is just a derivative of getting more confidence around growth projection in our industrial class, our residential and commercial sectors, as well as incorporating some views of electric vehicle charging and what that would do over the next 10-year forecast.
Andrew, is this is this a significant uptick from previous years, that 1.4?
I think that is, Randy, that if I look back over our history, we've been somewhere between 1 and 1.5% increase in load growth. That's been pretty consistent. So I would say it's on par with our historical and moving forward.
Thank you.
So with that, I'll turn it over to Chad.
Andy, can you give me an audio check?
You're good, Chad.
Thank you. So thanks, Andy. Chad Rissman, Director of Distribution Engineering and Asset Management. One of the things we like to key in on is substation build activity. They're pretty big facilities and also kind of the heart of our distribution system, converting power from our transmission system to the distribution system. So to meet all those capacity requirements and forecasts and needs and keep the lights on, I'd like to focus in on the substation. Fairly big. Probably won't be talking about this one next time, but Andy did touch on it. Holly Street Substation was energized and providing service back in July. It's in the north end of town to support some services here in the area. Also, John, in the previous discussion on balanced scorecard district goals, OMI Substation, we are in commissioning of that right now. So our own technicians and wiremen are testing and going through process and procedures for energizing. We forecast that to be ready to be energized at the end of the year. The next two substations that are in the mix and heavy in the design and outreach phase, both of these stations, North Shore and Leavenworth Bavarian, there are sites that are chosen, properties been purchased, and we're heavy in the design. We've established a committee of folks that are interested in what the substation layout is going to look like, some of the aesthetic alternatives and options that we might have. So towards the end of the year, we'll be kicking those off once we've got plan and profiles and concepts laid out about what the station's going to look like, including ingress, egress, and elevations and those things that the community surrounding these substations would be most likely interested in. The heavy design related things, electrical engineering, electrical design, they'll be delivered to us in the end of February. So we're moving right along on both of those stations. We hope to be in construction and receiving the equipment and things in the latter part of next year. Wenatchee upsize plan. So Andy mentioned a few things going on in the city of Wenatchee, and we've got several substations in the city of Wenatchee. One of the ones we like for upsizing, and so we'll be adding capacity to provide capacity in the Wenatchee area. We're developing plans likely to move our substation build team is likely to move from North Shore and Leavenworth to the Wenatchee once those two projects get through design completed. We're also looking at the Wenatchee Foothills, talk a little bit more about this one, a little bit more detail. I think we've covered this in previous load forecast updates and quarterly load updates, but this is the sort of north the horizon. So we are focused on long-term plans to be able to meet the needs of that growth. And then we are in evaluations for various sites in the Malaga / bottom of the Milt area for being able to meet ongoing load growth in the area. We've got a few sites that we're looking at, and we'll be teeing up some decisions for a site there. Next slide, please. Back to this West Wenatchee area. So just to orient yourself here, looking kind of the northern half of Wenatchee here, northern half of Western Street. And shaded in the blue there is the area that extends down below Castle Rock and then up to Maiden Lane area. So the area that goes out into the urban growth area that's looking like about 2,000 new residential units. And those are forecast to be a combination of single family and condos and apartments, and so really kind of a gamut of various loads. Getting a better understanding of what those loads are and forecasting out when they'll be built. We've got some existing substations that are in the immediate area. See that Western substation, College substation close to the left middle of the screen. Those are operating and serving capacity in the area. We do have some options to add some capacity to those stations by replacing some of the existing equipment. And so that could have an impact on being able to serve the new load and development in the near term. And then we also, the PUD does own and plans to build a substation on the southern portion of this called Castle Rock Substation, which is in the west of Western Street on Castle Rock. So there is property there, and PUD does plan on building that. We've had that property, the district's owned that property for some time. And when development was occurring in that area, recognizing the need there, the district purchased that property from a strategic planning perspective and really watching the load growth in the area and trying to determine when to build what capacity and when to build out what facility. So similarly, we're looking with all this Western Wenatchee load growth forecasted, we're looking at a future substation site. The timing of when a new substation build would be needed is being studied right now with the options that I discussed earlier about adding capacity to some of the existing substations, including potentially building out Castle Rock, depending on where the load growth occurs. But it looks like at this point we are going to need a new substation sometime in the future. So I think what we'll be teeing up there is some options for property, whether or not that substation is built right away. I think one of the things we've tried to do in the past is identify where these substations are going to be located so that as building and development occurs around that location, the community can be informed before we build it. And I think that's the option that we've all liked. So next slide. Just a little bit closer look at the three different options that we're looking at in addition to a new substation. The one on the left there, and so that's a sort of a photo rendering of adding capacity. Right now we only have half of what's shown there, so it's Photoshop, but adding a second transformer. The challenge with that is the location of the substation is on the northern side, so whenever new substation capacity gets built, they actually have to deliver that capacity through distribution lines to where it's being used. And there's some congestion along the current rights of ways and existing facilities. So we don't want to be in a position where we've built substation capacity and we're unable to deliver it. So we're studying various options of how we might be able to do some distribution upgrades. Similarly, a College substation on the previous map showed College is a little bit more, a little bit closer to where the load growth there in the western part of Wenatchee is. We do have two substations in the one yard, in the one site. One of the substations is older. It's a 22 megawatt substation, and our latest standard is a 28, so we could get a few more megawatts out of that if we replace the transformer. So that's part of the options. And then I had mentioned the third one is Castle Rock Substation. So all three of these could provide some relief and allow us to potentially delay and defer a new substation in Western Wenatchee. At this point in time where we are in the studies, it doesn't look like we'll have the ability to eliminate, but potentially defer a delay. So we'll probably be teeing up the question of whether or not we want to move forward with purchasing property and securing property even before we might need it. And then the timing of substation builds can be dependent on what the actual growth that occurs in the area. Going to move to the summary slide. Any questions on substation build progress or status? Okay, hearing none, just jump to a little summary. So new construction development and properties continues across the county, which Andy laid out there, somewhat in line with historical. I would note that the percentages are based number of units that we have in the county, and our base existing capacity has increased all year. So even though the 1.5% is consistent with previous years, 1.5% does represent a larger capacity and number of services that are being increased just because of the nature of percentages. So even though the percentage is the same, we're building more capacity, or having to build more capacity. Confidence levels around load growth, that's to some extent what's driving some of the variability in our load forecast is our confidence level as loads actually come online. The forecasts get a little bit more concrete and our confidence level increases, so there's some variability around our forecast just related to confidence. And some of the work that we're doing to try to meet those demands, growth demands. The next slide, I think, is the question slide.
Commissioners, any questions? Good update, Andrew and Chad. Thank you.
I have a quick question to Chad. I think I already know the answer, but Chad, the that new location you were talking about in Western Wenatchee, where they're, I think the prognosis is for up to 2,000 new residences. You said we own land there already. I'm assuming we have some kind of signage on that land indicating that a substation will be eventually someday built at that location.
Yes, we do on the Castle Rock substation that we're kind of the southerly part of where we're anticipating that growth. It's west of Western Street on Castle Rock, there is a sign there.
Great. Okay.
Historically, what we've tried to do is put a sign there so we can inform folks as they're moving in and building around there that the potential future site. Looking to do the same thing north of that, on the end of Springwater, somewhere in there potentially for another substation site. So more on that to come.
Great. Thanks, Chad.
Any additional questions? Thank you.
Okay, we'll move to item six. This is a review and update on fiber rates. Bob Shane will be making this presentation.
Thank you, Steve. Commissioners, Bob Shane, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecom. I'm here to present a review of proposed fiber rates effective next year. Next slide, please. So basically here to get feedback on the proposed rates as I'm going to demonstrate or propose here. No board action is required. We are looking for board approval on December 20th. The rates would become effective in February. That gives us a little time to go out and get some feedback from our providers as we're proposing these rates here. Generally, the rates are a refinement. We're not making any significant changes in the types of services, just how we're breaking them up into a little more different ways to better meet the customer's needs, specifically the service providers. These changes are targeting basically revenue neutral, meaning we're not trying to increase our revenue. We're trying to keep it the same. But we do have the approved 3% annual rate increase in place through 2024, which will drive our revenue up. Next slide, please. So in summary, that the changes are specifically to our residential, business, and carrier class services and rates. So we primarily provide service to those three different entities. Ultimately, we want to provide a level of service that translates to value and benefit to our customer owners receiving those services through our system. We're very fortunate that our system has the capability and capacity to do these things without any type of change to our network. And ultimately, we want to keep our service providers competitive and responsive to the changing environments as that changes here in the with broadband advancement. Next slide, please. So the drivers for the change, we listened to our providers, we listened to our end customers. Most recently, we had some feedback from our retail service providers that are just mentioning that they'd like to see some slight changes in our rates and our processes, which we'll talk through. Essentially, you want to simplify or combine or eliminate some services that we have now that aren't really necessarily bringing real value to the customers the way we have it set up, and I'll talk about that in a little bit more. And then we're, as experts, we're looking at the industry and see where it's changing in terms of support and types of services. 5G and those other things are beginning to see more and more activity out there, so we're wanting to prepare for those without getting too far ahead of technology. We certainly don't want to deploy something that hasn't been fully vetted out just to change it later on when the actual technologies roll and we find out that we're not connected. So we watch for and anticipate future services as we go forward. Next slide, please. So break these down and really the issues and the solutions. So there is some local competition from other service providers not on our network that are offering what we consider a lesser residential type service at a lower cost. What we're wanting to propose back in response to that is provide more service for the same rights. So increase what we are providing to our service providers and our customer owners instead of lowering the rates. We believe our rates are as competitive as they can be, and to lower those, I don't think it would meet our financial needs. The providers are looking for lower cost services for businesses and carriers. We'll talk a little bit about that. What we did there is we introduced a tiered service between service levels. So in other words, there's some incremental pricing between where they are now and where they want to be to give them a little more granularity in picking those services at a slightly lower cost for each of those increasing services. We also are seeing a large data users such as cellular carriers and large businesses looking for anticipating more bandwidth. So we're going to introduce a 10 gigabit per second service, which is super fast services, but we are seeing that beginning to show up in the industry. And another thing is we if you recall, we have a installation fee that we have for every connection. We're going to go ahead and for residential businesses eliminate that barrier. That helps with the low-income folks, and it also helps to increase our overall take rate. Next slide, please. So we'll get a little bit into the details. So you'll recall our rates are called DLL, or Data Loop Local Loop Services. What we're doing in general is we're going to increase both the 100 megabits and the gigabit services for residential to be symmetrical. So right now, it's for an example, it's 100 megabits down and 10 up. We're going to make it symmetrical, so the 100 down and the 100 up, or gig down and gig up. That's really important as we start to see more two-way communications on our broadband system as a result of video conferencing. Typically, you need a lot of download. You don't need quite as much upload, but we're seeing more two-way communications, and so the upload service is something that's truly a desirable and a feature that our system can support and will greatly be appreciated by our customer owners. On the business side, we're changing our 100 megabits to gigabits, as I said before. There will be a slight increase for the 100 megabit service, but there'll be no rate change for the gigabit service and being symmetrical, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. The other change we're making, and you might recall that we had an aggregate bandwidth charge What we're going to do now is we're going to incorporate that into the base rate with each of the DLL services. So there's no bandwidth change. In other words, there's no restriction on the bandwidth usage or anything like that. It's going to be just embedded in the base rate. The reason we're doing that is when it was separate, it had to be calculated separate. It was pretty complicated to calculate and to capture the billing for that. And the providers didn't see a real value in it. So we thought it was innovative when we introduced it, and I think it was, but it's really problematic in the sense that it's too complicated to use and therefore was not used. So we're gonna remove that rate and just basically incorporate the bandwidth into the basic service that you get under the DLL. As I mentioned, we're gonna eliminate the installation fee for new residential and businesses. And we are using this as an opportunity to introduce a residential wireless rate. Now, we don't have a wireless solution now, but we are looking at some trials or pilots, and we'd like to have a rate in place so that when we do stand those pilots up for testing, we'll have a rate that we could charge for that. We would certainly come back to the board before we actually implemented any type of wireless trial solution for your recommendation and input. Next slide, please. We're capturing the actual rate. So as I mentioned before, we're taking the 100 by 10, we're moving it to 100 by 100, meaning it's symmetrical. And you can see the rate stays the same, so that's where we're getting more for the same. On the 100, the gig by 100 to 1 gig by 1 gig, it remains, again, the same for our customers on the residential side. Next slide, please. Same DLS solution, but a business rate. So as I mentioned, the 100 by 10 is going to 100 by 100. There is a slight increase, or there is an increase in rate. We don't feel like that's, we still think that's very competitive. There's been some changes in the way the services are being offered on our VLAN services that made this solution a lower cost solution for our providers. We're just trying to recapture some of that cost that we lost from going from a VLAN service to this service. And we'll talk a little bit about that as we go through. And then again, on the 1 gig by 100 going to 1 gig by 1 gig symmetrical, we're keeping the same cost on that.
Question.
Yes.
On that 100 by 10 going to 100 by 100, that's a fairly significant jump. What percentage of our sales are in this category?
It's relatively low, Randy. It is growing, and the reason it's growing is there's really the intended solution was a VLAN for these customers, and that was a much higher cost solution. These particular customers are needing a stripped down version of a VLAN or a lower level VLAN service. So we had customers that are paying the higher VLAN charge are now moving to this lower cost VLAN for a subset of those customers. And so I guess what I'm saying is they're actually getting a better service for the 3710 than what they were getting at a much higher cost of the VLAN. So even though it's higher, it's much less than what it was for the VLAN service. Hope that made sense.
It did. Thank you.
Next slide, please. So the VLAN solution is a special type service that we offer. We're going to restructure our VLAN services so that the lowest tier that we offer is 100 megabits per second. Right now, it's 50 megabits per second, although that service is no longer used very heavily, and it's almost a legacy type solution. But what we are doing is moving all of those customers that were taking the 100 meg service previously, we're now moving them into the new service, which is slightly less than what they're paying now. So the existing 100 meg services, the near service, or new tier service, the new rates is slightly less. So there's some savings there. The tiered service is important in that right now a customer would want to buy a particular service. There's only two categories. There is the 100 meg or the gig service. What we're offering now is something in between those incremental tiers so they can buy a smaller portion of what they want instead of buying the full meal deal. So it's a incremental cost to go from where they are now to where they want to go in steps of, and we'll talk about 100 megabits or 200 megabit increments. And we'll get to that in a little bit here. Now, having that service, we do have to create what's called a port charge. And really all that is a connection fee that allows us the incremental rates to be deployed. So we'll talk about that a little bit here. And we are offering a new 10 gigabit service, as I mentioned before. We have not had that before, but we do now have it now. And some of the cleanup stuff, we're going to eliminate our term contracts. We had some for VLANs. We had very little take, actually had no take on that. So we don't see that those are any value. So we're just going to eliminate that from our rates. Next slide, please. So here's a table that helps describe what I just went through. So the VLAN solution, business class carrier, the first three items are being eliminated, but being replaced. So the 50 megabit service that I spoke about before is really a legacy. It's really not used anymore. There are a couple of those customers that will be moving to the new 100 megabits service. That's the first new item on the proposed rate. So they will move from 112 to 135, slight increase there. The next line down, the 100 megabits burstable fixed, is going away. That will actually be replaced, as I said earlier, with the 100 megabits by 100 megabits port at $135. So there's a decrease rate for them. And then the one gigabit per second fixed at $399 will get replaced with two components. One, if you come down on the second line of the new entries, the new proposed, you get a gig port for $225, and then you buy increments of 200 megabits for each 200 megabits of circuit. So you're going to get basically $225 plus $36. That total there would be compared to the 1 gigabit fixed that they're currently paying now for $399, and it's quite a bit less, and you actually get an additional 100 megabits of service on that. So that allows them to buy tiers or incrementals up to the full speed that they're looking to get, instead of having to buy, forced to buy a gig fixed, they can now buy increments. So it's much more, better options than that. And we do, so we're also introducing the 10 gigabit port. Same concept, you buy connections, that's the port, and then you can buy up in 1 gigabit incremental. So you don't buy the full 10 gig, but you can buy 2 or 3 or 4 as you need, which is really important for the carriers because they don't necessarily need the full 10 gig, although some might. They'll want to buy increments up to that speed to get where they want to go. So that's where we're adding some flexibility or some tiered incremental pricing to help the providers. There's a lot of stuff I said there. Is that any questions on that particular slide?
Bob, I have a question for you, and that is that the providers, in this case, companies like Localtel, will be describing this to their customers, correct?
That's correct.
Have you gotten feedback? Are they feeling confident that they won't lose the customers and they won't just get a glazed over look, or do they feel that this is something that's easily explained to a new customer?
Yes, and I appreciate that question. So this, in the industry, this is pretty fairly common and understood. I'm probably not doing the best job in describing this, but this is what they have actually come to us and asked for: tiered incremental pricing. So it, my analogy would be probably a terrible one. You go to Costco and you can buy a big box of cereal, or you can buy at the regular grocery store a single box. We want something in between. So you don't have to buy the full meal deal. You can buy smaller portions, but still get a discount and buy multiples of it at a slightly discount.
Great. Thank you.
Next slide, please. So the exact, very similar on the carrier class. So the previous slide was a business class. And the difference between a business class and the carrier class is businesses are typical brick and mortar type businesses, banks and so forth. The carriers are more specific to the cellular carriers that bring capacity to their cell towers here in Chelan County. So it's very similar. You're going to have the first three go away, and in placement, you'll have the gigabit port, which is the basic connection fee, and then increments of 200 megabits at $100 per increment. And then once again, the 10 gig port comes in at $1,000 with increments at 1 gigabit to go up from there. Next slide. And we are giving an update on the NRCs. So the NRCs, we are adding the charge for the 10 gigabit NRC, which is listed there at 3623. And that's the same for both the business class and carrier class. So these NRCs are basically based on the material labor cost to get the services put in place. It's the installation of the switches and any patching, any splicing we have to do, that's included in that. And under the NRCs, we have the installation fee. So it's listed here is to let you know we're removing that $80 installation fee for all the DLL services, which applies to both businesses and residential. Next slide, please. Any questions or comments? I went through that pretty quick. The VLANs may have been confusing. I'll be more than happy to go back on that and spend some more detail. There is an appendix for some of the terminology.
Commissioners, any questions? I don't hear any, Bob, but I think it came through pretty clear to me. So I appreciate we know that we have to stay current in this arena and more nimble than probably anything else we do because rapidly changing industry.
It is a very competitive business unit, and commissioners, thank you for your support on this fiber program. It's making us very successful.
Thanks again, Bob.
Okay, commissioners, next up, we want to give you an update on the parks program. Ryan, we'll turn it over to you.
Fantastic. Rebecca, are you going to help bring up the slides here by chance?
Is anybody else hearing a little bit of a sound problem?
We are not here. Is there one on your end?
I can barely hear him.
How about this?
Me too.
Better?
Yep.
Boy.
Fantastic. We were a little far away from the microphones there, so appreciate your patience. Well, good morning, commissioners. Ryan Baker, Parks Manager here at the Chelan County PUD. Along with me is our North End Superintendent, Kyle Endemann. We're here today to talk about a parks update. Next slide, please. All right, so why are we here? Well, we'd like to update you on capital and major maintenance projects in 2022. We'll talk about the Arondo River Park Agreement. We'll then talk about the Sportsplex and sport court updates. No board action requested today. Next slide, please.
All right there. Our first capital project we're going to talk about are a couple of irrigation projects up in the Manson area, Old Mill Park and Manson Park. As you can kind of see from the pictures here, we have some substantial damage that has occurred over the last, many years. Couple problems with this. One, increased in labor cost. They're working on these systems about every other week, taking up a lot of labor hours. Also, both these parks are on domestic water. So that means that every time they get a major leak, they're really losing a lot of money in water cost. It is also causing some infrastructure damage, all the water leaking onto our hard surfaces and even onto the grass and the trails and stuff. It has been kind of extensive. So they've done a lot of damage over the years. So we are proposing to replace both these systems from the ground up. Should last approximately 30 years, we hope, from the major components of this. And it will reduce both the water cost and the labor cost involved with this. You can see we have a number put down there, about $290,000. You'll see these budget numbers on a lot of our slides. I want to make note that these are estimates. They have not gone out to bid. So with the bidding climate right now, I'm a little leery on, you know, having you think that those are exact numbers. Those are the best guess that we have right now. But those could change depending on how the bidding climate moves forward. Next slide, please.
All right, let's jump downriver and talk about Confluence State Park. We want to talk to you about the North Bank site. So this site is actually located south of the boat launch and the swim areas at Confluence State Park. It's actually going to be the longest bank stabilization project we've done in parks. The entire construction site is approximately 1,000 feet in length. The work includes protecting cultural resources and addressing current safety-related issues with unstable bank areas, as noted in the pictures there. Those are actual outlook looks from the campground where campers come out and can get a peek at what's going on the Columbia River. And we've had one of those closed for about 3 years now in anticipation of this project. So as part of the mitigation work for this project, we'll be required to plant 3,000 plants, including live stakes. The design also includes a split rail fence with viewing areas of the Columbia River. The overall project cost for this project is approximately $1.27 million. And again, as Kyle mentioned, these are estimates at this point and still need to go out to bid. Next slide, please. We'll actually jump up north and talk about the Eniat Park erosion. This is in the campground area. This is a relatively small area in comparison to Confluence. It's approximately 300 feet of bank failure that has really failed in a short period of time. Testing has indicated that a pocket of sand is washing into the Columbia River through erosion by wave action and fluctuation of the reservoir. The project will stabilize the area with underlayment, rock, and fish-friendly habitat with gravel, that is, and plants. This project is the first to use the permitting process the district developed with agencies specifically to address shoreline erosion. And you may recall that we refer to that as the programmatic approach. This is that book of recipes that we've agreed with the agencies that we can look to when we have erosion sites. And this really streamlines the process for both them and saves the district overall costs as we work through the design process. This project is estimated at $267,000.
Next slide, please. All right. This is the south shore of Chelan Riverwalk Park erosion project. This is slated to hopefully be under construction late 2022 and wrap up in 2023. What we have going on here is we have three individual sites, one of them down kind of by the boat launch. The other one that's depicted in the picture on the right here is Mid Park, and then we have another area near the Wooden Avenue Bridge. You can kind of see from the picture here, the picture on the right there, you can kind of see by the rock pile an irrigation pipe there. We have lost about 6 to 8 feet of our irrigation system over the last 3 years. This erosion here has also caused us to lose a picnic table and a bench. And if we don't, you know, kind of address this situation, it is encroaching on the trail there. What we are looking to do here is, like I mentioned, have three areas that are constructed, and we will kind of funnel people into what we call touch points. So each of these three areas will kind of be areas where people can get to the water. They're doing it anyway. This erosion is caused a lot by people just trying to access water to go swimming, to launch their paddleboards, whatnot. So we're going to kind of direct them with vegetation and fencing into these areas that are kind of hardened for erosion and allow them to gain access to the water that they're already doing now. This may also include a swim area up by the Wooden Avenue Bridge. This is an area where people are already swimming, already launching paddleboards and whatnot, and we may formalize that area. We're looking into that. As you may know, the neighbors around this area are very interested and involved, so we will have a pretty extensive public outreach to make sure that they're aware of what's going on and to get their input here. There is also an opportunity with this project. We have a safety concern on one of the steep slopes just kind of above the water from these pictures here. That was a safety concern. We had a worker fall and hurt themselves. We're looking at terracing that and making that more easy to maintain. So we may be able to roll those two projects in kind of with one contractor. If it works out, we might be able to save a little bit of money on that other project. Next slide, please.
All right. Thanks, Kyle. That was kind of the laundry list of erosion. Let's shift gears and talk about Arondo River Park. It's been a little bit of time since we've updated the commission on what we've been up to. We've been talking with the Regional Port Authority about a 10-year agreement with a 5-year opener, an up to annual reimbursement of $30,750. That's a 2.5% annual increase to that number. We've been talking about the concept of sharing in some capital and major maintenance costs. A few examples there might include fencing around the gazebo, new ADA picnic tables and benches, and potentially looking at updating the signage. We've used some temporary signage as we've transitioned from the campground to day use, so hoping to get those projects and agreement wrapped up here. The port is looking into recreation and conservation office funding. That's the RCO funding you might hear to update the marine facility noted in the picture here. That's an all-wooden structure with wooden pile, and there's certain areas of that dock system that's starting to fail. Other projects that RCO funding might be updating that they're looking into is the restroom facility, as well as the parking lot and gazebo. So looking forward to see if they're successful there. We'll be back to the board, to you folks, in December and January on progress. We're getting ready to send the draft agreement to them for review, and looking forward to get that one buttoned up. That's one we've been working on, as you know, for a couple of years. So next slide, please. Okay, let's jump down to our Sportsplex update. And when I talk about Sportsplex, I'm primarily talking about Walla Walla Point Park, Kirby Billingsley Hydro Parks, our 7 fields down there. In addition to, we want to talk about some proposed changes. So let's start with the sporting field challenges. So right now, we are getting a multitude requests for changing. Basically, they've been changing over time, the multitude of requests we're receiving. That was kind of confusing, so let me start over. The use requests we're receiving are changing over time, and what I mean by that is the spring versus the fall. Historically, we've scheduled baseball, softball in the spring, and soccer in the fall time. Well, we're getting requests from soccer and lacrosse and other users to try to come in ahead of softball, baseball, in which we've done the last couple of years. But that, of course, has increased the overall use and the length of season of our ball fields. In fact, we're running soccer right now until about mid-November, which historically has been in October. So you can just see that use has increased, which leads to impacts on our fields. So we're starting to see quite a few wear patterns on our fields, particularly with soccer, with sports that can stay in one areas with goal boxes. And so we're trying to look at that balance of use versus, the amount of applications that we're receiving. Shifting gears into proposals, we're proposing at updating our facility use guidelines. Our facility use guidelines are the primary driver for us on how we schedule our fields. And what I mean by that is we get nonprofit groups all the way to for-profit groups. And so right now, we don't anticipate any major changes with that. We still foresee for-profits scheduled and local groups well ahead of any for-profit. But that leads me into the fees and how we collect fees. We want to streamline our fee process. You may recall a few years ago that we implemented a fee process, and the reason we did that on our ball fields is we were seeing increased use. We were seeing folks saying they were going to use ball fields and then just not get enough teams and maybe drop a tournament on a Friday right before the weekend. So the complex is set empty. And so to combat that, we implemented a fee structure. Well, with that fee structure, like I mentioned, it's $150 for the complex. We would then reimburse or ask for invoice, I should say, our teams after the fact. So essentially, we were doing it twice. And as we start to do kind of our check-ins with local groups, we're realizing there's a tiered approach out there that's very effective. So nonprofit groups will pay significantly less than, for example, for-profits that would be scheduled lastly, I should say. So our next step is that stakeholder engagement. We want to engage our local softball, baseball folks, soccer folks, just to make sure that any changes that we propose don't have major impacts on them. So that's our update with the Sportsplex. Next slide, please.
All right, I'm going to take a few minutes to talk to you about our sports court remodeling. You may remember that we brought this to you, last spring, maybe in March. What we're going to do is we're going to redo these sport courts back then. Didn't happen this year. There were a couple of reasons. One, we had all sorts of problems getting a contractor in, couldn't find the paint, all sorts of things. We also increased we talked with our stakeholders, mainly the pickleball folks, and there is an uptick in people that want to play pickleball. So we went back to the drawing board, and this is kind of what we came up with. So you can see in the picture, that is Walla Walla Park. What we're planning on doing there is we are planning on doing some crack repairs and some resurfacing, painting, and then we're gonna bring in those pickleball courts. So we maintain two tennis courts, but on the lower half of the field in the picture there, we are going to look at adding an additional 6 pickleball courts. So that will help address some of the pickleball needs here at Walla Walla. We are also looking at redoing the Daroga sport courts there. This originally wasn't this high on the list, but it was in such bad shape, we were in danger of having to close that court down for safety reasons, so we had to move it up the list. So there, it's kind of almost a total rebuild. We have to redo the asphalt court. We have to remove and install new fencing. And then we're also there going to change the use. So we'll have one tennis court there, and then we'll bring in an additional 2 pickleball courts there. Little higher fee, looking about $168,000 there is what we're estimating. That is because it's a major redo at that particular park. So we did have some stakeholder outreach on this. We heard a lot from, as I'm sure you have, we've heard a lot from the pickleball groups, and we are now in the process of, updating these courts, and as we redo them, we'll start adding additional pickleball courts as needed. Next slide, please.
Awesome. Thanks, Kyle. So in summary, our erosion projects are on schedule and within budget. We are on track with our O&M and capital spending for our irrigation systems. We plan to come back and present the Arondo River Park Agreement to the board in December, January, depending on the timing with the port. We're busy working on updating the field use guidelines and streamlining the rate structure. And lastly, as Kyle just mentioned, our sports court repairs and pickleball transition has been adjusted based upon feedback and meetings with our local stakeholders. So with that, we welcome any questions you have, commissioners.
Commissioners, any questions?
President, I'd like to make a comment. And I've got a comment about the transition on the pickleball courts, guys. Great job. I have heard earfuls from the pickleball community about putting in pickleball courts on our property. And thank you very much for moving forward and listening to that group of folks. This will be this will be a real home run within the pickleball community. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for your comments there. And I just thank you guys for really weighing in March in that presentation and just suggesting that we meet with these folks. It was very eye-opening to see, we kind of hear how much use we get and phone calls we may receive, but it was just really eye-opening to see how many community members are out there playing pickleball. So thanks for that.
Steve.
Hi, Ryan. Just want to reinforce what Gary said and also ask a question. Not that I'm encouraging this, but and I don't want to take up additional time on your part, but have you ever completed an investigation on high-use fields going to AstroTurf? The cost of that and maintenance of that and replacement of that versus what it costs for us to maintain a high use fields?
Yeah, great question, Commissioner McKenna. In fact, something that if you look at the fields on the west side that they've transitioned to, just because of how wet it is, you hear me talk about when it gets wet, how things get torn up. And so I think that the simple answer to your question is been about 5 years ago where we brought in a company to study what that would look like, what the cost would be. Back then, if I recall, a single field was about $1.5 million to convert from grass, if you will, to turf. I think there was some concerns as we bought it through internal committees about replacement costs at the tune of about 10 years if they continue to see the same type of use. You're absolutely right to say there's different maintenance equipment needed for that. And so at the time, we decided not to move forward any further just because of the cost. But, you know, eventually, you know, it could potentially make sense on a field or two. I can share with you in our benchmarking with the high school, if you've been up at the Apple Bowl, that's what they did. They converted to turf, and their rate structure is such that what they're charging folks, they anticipate getting that revenue enough to replace the field in the 10 years. So perhaps that's something to look at, but I think you're on the right track to say there are options out there. We haven't gone any further on at least the turf option.
Thanks, Ryan. I was just curious on what you've answered my question. Don't need to do anything further as long as that's been studied and people are keeping an eye on that. I believe at some point with watering issues, et cetera, that there becomes, you know, it does lean towards the area of a replacement with those AstroTurf fields, and I was just curious. So thank you for answering that.
You betcha.
Any other commissioner questions? I guess I have one that, and you know, sort of along the lines of the shift in our community from, I won't say away from tennis, but toward pickleball. In your conversations with the community, do we have the balance right on our parks between baseball and soccer at this point?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I probably could have better explained that in the ball field slide, but as far as the use request, that's what we're going to be exact, Commissioner Smith.
Thank you. Any other questions, commissioners? Well, Steve, I want to say that you've struck the exact right number of presentations for the morning session.
Being lucky is better than being good. So.
Okay. Since it is a couple of minutes after 12, let's recess for lunch and reconvene at 1 o'clock.
Great.
See you in an hour.
Thank you.
Good afternoon and welcome to the afternoon business session of the November 1, 2021 Chelan County Public Utility Commission. We met this morning for a study session and we're back this afternoon for our business session, and the first item of business is a public hearing regarding the preliminary budget, and hand it off to either Steve or Mark Mullins. I'm not sure how I start, Steve.
Well, I'll take a moment just to say that this is a part of our process for putting together the budget, the annual budget. We have been through the five-year business plans and discussion of the key assumptions that will go into the 2022 preliminary budget. This now gets into the numbers, so we're getting into increasing level of detail. Mark Mullins will take it from there.
Great. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate that. And good afternoon, commissioners. Mark Mullins, Director, Enterprise Planning, Risk, and Analytics. I'll pause here for a moment while we load up the presentation. There it is. So today I'll be presenting the 2022 preliminary budget for Chelan County PUD. This is the first of two public hearings for the 2022 budget. I'd also like to note that on the line is our Strategic Financial Planning Group. Deborah Vaughn coordinates the budgeting process every year, so works closely with our different operating units and business managers to ensure that we're meeting a pretty tight deadline. So she runs a pretty tight ship and does really, really great in keeping us moving forward through this budget process. And thanks to all the detailed work from Brett Hammond and Dave Nelson as well, as well as the business managers. Thank you. So what we'll cover today is the timeline. We'll go through our initial results and highlights, and then we'll follow up with our next steps. There is no board action required today. So just to refresh and anchor where we've been with respect to the budget timeline, on October 4th, if you recall, Steve Wright, our general manager and managing directors, presented our five-year 2022 through 2026 business plan. We transitioned then into the budget kickoff presentation where we outlined some of our key assumptions and provided an overview. That was on October 18th. And we're here today as the first of two public formal hearings on November 1st. And then 2 weeks from today, we'll be back for our second public hearing on November 15th. And then following that, in December 6th, we'll request approval for the budget for 2022. So I think this is a slide that you've seen in the past, but it's good to anchor to where we're at today with respect to the budget. And just a reminder that this is built around our business plans that were presented on October 4th. That was a five-year look, and this is the more focused look specifically on 2022 strategic initiatives. At the top of our balanced scorecard, of course, is customer owner satisfaction, and of course, the foundation of all of our strategic initiatives and budget. The district initiatives identified here, which are driving the numbers, are designed to accomplish our four strategic goals, which are investing in assets and people, financial resiliency, continuation of the public power benefit, as well as supporting the county with economic development while continuing to keep rates low. Just a reminder, by board resolution, it does require us to bring forward an annual budget and a five-year financial plan that is compliant with our district's financial policies. Next slide, please. So with this is a preliminary look for the budget for 2022, along with our five-year forecast for the period 2022 through 2026. I won't get into all of the details around the numbers because we have subsequent slides that we can provide a little bit more detail, but I would like to highlight a couple of items. The shaded column is our preliminary budget for 2022 based on what we know today. And then the far right columns, of course, are the forecast for the five-year period. For 2022 specifically, our combined bottom line is $58.4 million. This is a little bit higher than what we presented at the 2022 through 2026 business plan presentation. And it's also about $7 million higher than last year's budget adoption from a bottom line perspective. I'd also like to note from a five-year forecast, if you look at our combined bottom line with this forecast at the preliminary 2022 budget and compare that to last year's forecast at budget adoption, our bottom line has improved over the entirety of the 5 years by about $67 million. So a positive improvement there when comparing this year's forecast to last year's. Next slide. Looking specifically at our 2022 through 2026 financial metrics, I would like to highlight that we are all green for the five-year period. For liquidity and days cash on hand, as mentioned in the Q3 presentation this morning, we do plan on issuing debt in 2023 based on this forecast. And they were indicated as yellow, indicating that we're within 10% of that metric, but we are meeting the metric. Then I'd also like to note with combined debt service coverage at 2.34 to 3.67, well in excess of our target of 2.0. And with those improved bottom line conditions, this is an improvement over our last year's forecast as well. Similarly, on the debt ratio, planning on being less than 17% based on this forecast in 2026. This is an improvement from where we are last year as well. So looking more specifically at our combined financials for 2022, again, anchoring to that bottom line of $58.4 million. I won't get into much of the details, but you can see the direct comparison on these different income statement line items. comparing the preliminary budget for 2022 versus our adopted budget for 2021. We do have a number of moving parts here that I'll explain in the next few slides, but service revenue is seeing a bump this year in this budget, primarily due to our off-system end-use sale with the market price component of that particular contract. Net surplus revenue, we're also seeing some benefits associated with our hydro long-term contract revenue and higher prices as well. Other operating revenue, relatively flat. And then we're also seeing some increases as we push forward on our strategic objectives, increases around our operating expenditures. And then depreciation is up as well also as we continue to put some of those capital projects into service and start recognizing the depreciation component. So again, a bottom line of $58.4 million. This is about a $7 million improvement over last year's adopted budget. So looking specifically at service revenue, looking at the total, about $112 million. This is $16 million in our adopted budget for 2021. With the primary driver, again, with our off-system end-use sale, there's a market price component to that contract that is driving the prices here. And there is an offset in our net wholesale revenue that, on the next slide, as we're taking megawatts from our net wholesale revenue bucket and moving it into the service revenue bucket. I would note that we do have some growth assumptions associated with all four of our business lines around electric, water, wastewater, and fiber and telecom with 3% rate increases as well, consistent with our strategic plan for 2020 through 2024, 3% for electric and fiber, and then 4% for water and wastewater. I'd also like to note that the HDL, our largest retail load, is continuing to ramp up, so we are seeing some increases there as well. And as we continue to do, as we get into the budget season, we continue to refine these numbers. You've heard a lot about the integrated resource plan, as well as the load forecast. So as we get into the second public hearing, and over the course of the next couple of weeks, we'll continue to fine tune these different revenue line items. So you may see some movement between the two as we refresh with our latest assumptions. On the net surplus energy revenue side, $217 million in our preliminary 2022 budget, up about $8 million from last year. You can see on the slice contracts, those are up about $4 million. We do have a five-year slice that starts in market-based slice that starts in 2022 that's replacing a prior five-year slice that's rolling off and happens to be at a lower price, rolling off in 2021. This will be the last year for that slice. So we're seeing a little bit of a bump there as well. But overall, the EP&T net wholesale revenue up a little over $1 million. On the long-term hydro contracts, we're up about $6.5 million. We do have some increased hydro O&M, so we have the benefit of some of that cost recovery in the form of revenue in this particular category. On the Nine Canyon side, we're seeing a reduced cost forecast for 2022. So we're seeing a reduction there, and that's primarily related to the debt being paid off. I think it's July of 2023. We'll have the debt service paid off for both phase one and phase two. So I expect we'll see a reduction next year as well on the Nine Canyons line item. On the other operating revenue, we have our transmission contract, the Chelan Transmissions System Revenue Requirement Contract. This is cost-based, so we do have cost recovery here, showing a slight increase as we increase our investments in operations and compliance-related items. Real-time contract, very consistent with what we budgeted last year, obviously, as you can see. Service late fees is a little bit lower this year because we do use a 10-year historical average for that particular line item, and we saw some lessening of in the COVID-19 world on the service fees and late charges, so we're seeing a little bit lower as part of this 2022 budget. On the miscellaneous other items, frequency response revenue is a driver there, along with increased administrative fees associated with selling the surplus related to our cost-based contract. Being a slight bump there, about $1 million overall. Other operating revenue coming in just under 25, but about $1 million increase over last year's budget. So focusing on our major O&M activities and items that are directly correlated to our strategic initiatives and strategic goals around hydro capability and distribution reliability, Rocky Reach turbine repairs, $3.8 million, associated with the large units as we continue to address the repairs on C10 and C11, as well as continuation of our smaller units, replacing the trunnion bushings and trunnion seals. That should be completed in 2022, while the large units will continue out into 2023 and 24. Moving to the right, on our hatcheries, $6.7 million. These are the operational contracts around the hatcheries and consistent with our historical spending. Tree trimming and vegetation management is included here in this $3.1 million. This is an increased amount over a baseline over a couple of years ago, consistent with what we were budgeting for last year. But it does include some of the work that we're doing to support our wildfire risk mitigation efforts. $3 million on our Tumwater Dam spillway repair, where we're doing some concrete repairs at the far bank wall. And then $3.1 million on the Rock Island Powerhouse 2 generator main leads. So looking at the specific numbers for hydro O&M, you can see we're up about $6 million, and that translates into increased revenue as well that you saw in our hydro long-term contract revenue as we get recovery for some of that. Included as some of the major drivers, as mentioned, the Rocky Reach unit repair costs for both the large units and the smaller units, the Tumwater spillway repairs, as well as work around Powerhouse 1 and Powerhouse 2 at Rock Island. The hydro fish and wildlife, we do have some fishway repairs that we're doing. However, that's partially offset by the 21 budget included the HCP 10-year check-in, which will no longer be included in the 2022 budget. So some offsetting impacts there. Similarly, on the hydro parks and recreation, we had some Discovery Center maintenance and some of the upgrades associated with that project, no longer in the budget for 2022. So we're seeing a slight decline there. Electric distribution is real consistent with the 21 budget, but I did want to note that this is incremental spending over a couple of years ago as we continue to pursue risk mitigation efforts around our wildfire risk. Electric transmission up slightly with Rocky Reach switchyard projects and continue to add resources for river management and optimization in our independent operations. And then fiber network O&M down slightly as we had some items included in the 2021 budget, but they're no longer present in the 2022 budget. Wastewater, development of the next comprehensive plan. There's some additional items that were related to the 2023 items related to that plan that are getting moved into 2022. So a slight increase for that line item. I'd like to note, one, on the insurance, we're expecting an increase. At least that's what we're budgeting for at this point in time in the preliminary budget with respect to insurance premium increases. As you heard from Ron Gibbs last June, wildfire risk is one of the items that's on the insurance underwriters' minds, and it's reflected in our insurance premiums, and we're planning for another challenging year by reflecting that increase in our insurance premiums. Under other admin and general line item category, as we focus on information technology and the associated licensing and maintenance, but also some one-time expenses related to facilities moving costs and one-time service connections as we continue to redevelop our current facilities as well. So overall, looking at our total, just under $225 million. This is an increase of about $11.6 million. Over last year's adopted budget and slightly less than what was presented during the business planning period for presentations. On the non-operating expense, as we continue to draw down our cash balances to pay for and fund some of our capital plan, as well as reducing debt, we're going to see investment earnings drop a little bit because of the lower cash balances. And on the other side of that, we're also reducing debt, so we're also seeing a lower interest expense as well. Other income and expense, we do have some retirements for debt-related premiums that we're previously amortizing. And as we retired that debt, then we had to recognize that in 2021, so that'll be no longer included as part of our forecast going forward. So overall, Slightly higher expense, about $0.8 million, but relatively close with what we presented in our business plan. Looking on the 2022 major capital projects, and Rock Island will again be one of our major drivers in this 2022 budget. A lot of work on Rock Island modernization, $20 million allocated for B1 through B4, $5 million for B5, B7, and B8, and then $45 million for U1 through U8, which is the Rock Island modernization efforts that you've heard a lot about. I would like to note and that you know we continue to refine the project schedules, and we're continuing that work now, and this is what we knew at the end of Q3. But we continue to look and work with our project managers and the engineers to ensure that we're bringing forth a budget with our best estimates. So we may see some refinements as we get into the second public hearing. Similarly, on the Rock Island cranes, Powerhouse 2 bridge crane, $3 million. Powerhouse 2 gantry crane, $1 million. Those are both expected to be completed in 2022. And the Powerhouse 1 gantry crane, $3 million. That's expected to be completed in 2023. Our other major capital project driver for 2022, a lot you've heard about already with the facilities, operations and service center, $72 million moving forward with this budget, as well as the Rocky Reach Central Maintenance of $14 million. So significant spending around facilities in the 2022 budget, as well as Rock Island from a capital perspective. Looking at some additional major capital projects, the Rock Island draft tube gate work, $4 million expected for 2022. Rocky Reach tail race gantry crane, $3 million expected for 2022, as well as some incremental work around the Rocky Reach governor controls at $1 million. Moving over to some of the distribution capital projects, you heard earlier this morning about all the work around our substations. We have the Bavarian substation at $5 million planned for 2022, as well as the North Shore Chelan substation at $5 million, and then the advanced metering infrastructure. And these items will carry over into the 2022 budget and also into the 2023 time period as well. Then, of course, continuation of our fiber expansion around and the public power benefit of $7 million. So looking more specifically at the numbers, and it's not easy to compare budget versus budget since these are so much project oriented, but I do want to identify the major items that we're going to be focusing on. As mentioned, a couple already on the electric distribution side, substations, advanced metering infrastructure, and our advanced distribution management system, our drivers on the electric distribution side. On the Rocky Reach hydro, we did have some HVAC work that we did in 2021, which is no longer in the 2022 budget, but we do have some work around the tail race gantry crane that I mentioned, as well as some spillway electrical work and governor controls. So budget versus budget, we're down a little bit on Rocky Reach hydro from a capital perspective. I would note on the Rock Island hydro, this is where we're seeing our significant expenditures around the Powerhouse 1 and Powerhouse 2 modernizations, as well as the crane work, and then the Powerhouse 2 draft tube gate cylinder work. So a slight increase comparing budget to budget. However, we will see most likely see some refinements in that schedule as we continue to look where we're at during the remainder of the year and what we can expect for 2022. On the Lake Chelan hydro, as I mentioned this morning, through Q3, our forecast indicated that we were going to be about 23% of spend through 2021, and that's primarily due to the delay associated with work due to a FERC requirement to do a probability failure mode analysis, which we've completed and currently continue to do the analysis at the engineering and project management level. But this project will be deferred from 2021 and moved out to 2022, which is what you're seeing reflected here. And on the corporate shared asset side, $86 million expected for 2022. And it's really just the timing of the spending of operations and service center, Rocky Reach, central maintenance facilities, as well as the backup control center. So on the integrated electric side, $196.5 million allocated for the capital budget at this point in time, an increase of about $12.5 million, $12.6 million. So continuing on into the fiber, we continue our public power fiber expansion. So you'll see some changes there in the budget comparison. Some additional investments on the water side, the SCADA system, water restraint, fall safety protection, as well as initiating work on the Dryden wastewater upgrade. So overall, about a 9% increase of $17.6 million, putting our total capital spend just under $207 million. And then we add in our lessor contributions, the fiber make ready offset work, as well as regulatory assets. And total net capital and regulatory assets expenditures, $215.4 million, about a 10% increase over last year, or $19 million higher. So looking at some existing projects where we're looking for in this budget, total capital project revisions. And again, these are existing projects, and highlighting those are that are just over $1 million. For the first three items, we're simply adding the remaining project budget work. So this will continue on for the next into 2022 and into 2023. But for the substation work, the North Shore Chelan, asking for just under $4 million for a revised budget total of $6.7 million. The Bavarian substation, asking for $3.9 million increase for a revised project budget of just under $6.5 million. And then the Dryden wastewater upgrade, adding the remaining budget on that one of $3.1 million, bringing that project to a revised project budget of just under $3.5 million. And then associated with the Powerhouse 2 work at Rock Island, U1 through U8 rehab, asking for a $1.3 million increase, revising that budget to $13,849,000. This is simply just adding the 2022 project scope only. And the U1 through 8 work specifically for this line item is more around the common work associated with this project, the pre-construction work, site work, as well as some planning work associated with that. But I did want to footnote this item just to make the board aware that we will have 9 different tracking projects associated with this. We have our 8 units that will be going forth for modernization. And then we have the U1 through U8 project line item, which is more designed for the common work that I just mentioned previously. But this does not increase our overall project forecast of $456 million. So that has not changed. This is just impacting this particular project, U1 through U8. And also looking at total capital project revisions, again, greater than $1 million. And these are the new projects. So looking at the service building network upgrade, $1.5 million. And this is outside of the scope of the construction of the facility, but this is more so the IT network hardware necessary for the service center. The next item, $1.5 million for the Rocky Reach facilities upgrade and the electrical load support associated with that. And then $1.3 million for the hyper-converged infrastructure. And this is associated with the data center replacement, and the intent is to collapse and condense two separate data center, older data center systems into this hyper-converged environment that'll include virtual servers and virtual desktop infrastructure into this condensed data center. So it decreases complexity and adds efficiencies. That's what that item is about. And then moving into the public power benefit projects, the riverfront park improvements, $2.7 million listed here as a initial project budget, a capital project budget. And it's currently in the design phase, so we'll expect to see more work in 2022 around engineering and design and permitting, with construction more in the 23 through 24 timeframe. The original total capital and O&M estimate is about $3 million, of which $2 million will be contributed by the city. So the overall net impact to the district from a public power benefit perspective and what was approved at the board is $1 million for this particular project. The remaining three items, an increase of $1.8 million associated with fiber work, which land, a little over $1.1 million for Blewett Pass and $1.1 million for INIAT, And this is not any changes to what the board has already approved for the fiber expansion project. This is just the allocation of that approved money to specific projects and specific work associated with the public power benefit and the fiber expansion program. So I'll pause here to see if there's any questions, and then I'm going to turn over this segment of the presentation to Steve Wright, who can go over the new positions that were all part of the 2022 through 2026 business planning process. But I'll pause briefly to see if there's any questions with what you've heard so far.
Commissioners, any questions for Mark? I think you provided great clarity and a huge capital budget.
It's huge. You posed the question this morning about how big 2021 is. So we do have one coming forward for 2022.
Okay, commissioners, let's talk a little bit about FTE. The FTE all come through the general manager for review and approval, so they're connected to strategy, and want to talk about them and what we're trying to accomplish with them. The first couple of positions, the project support, the planner coordinator, is in customer utilities. This is helping us to try to achieve our distribution reliability goals, along with the fact that we've given customer utilities the responsibility for a lot of the fiber make-ready work. So just finding need for being able to manage the workload that's there. The civil engineer project manager is in district services. We've just taken on a lot more projects in the last few years, and you can see it in the capital budgets, and we're finding that we are short with respect to the project manager, particularly with the civil engineering skills, to be able to accomplish the work that we're trying to get done. In the hydro capability arena, first position there, dispatch optimizer, is really about trying to make independent operations work better. We have some things that we have been planning to do that we think creates value, but we've been able to get to them because of a lack of folks to be able to get the work done. The electric engineer principal is only a two-year position. This is preparing for John Yale's retirement, really key position, as you all know, in terms of hydro operations. John's a very talented guy, planning to get somebody in and help with that transition, knowledge transfer, et cetera. On the distribution reliability side, all three of these positions are really related to an initiative that we are have a business case for to do directional boring that requires a certain type of equipment, and it requires a certain type of skills. I would say this one, we're pretty certain we're going to do this, not 100% certain enough that we wanted to include it in the budget so that if we decided to proceed, it was not going to require a separate conversation. But we're still working through all the specifics on this just to make sure that it makes sense. But it appears we do a lot of this kind of work. It's underground work, and it appears that having our own folks do it would be a more cost-effective way than the tremendous amount of contracting out work that we're doing now. In the technology innovation arena, we have unleashed a lot of creativity, which is fantastic. We have people all across the district who are excited about innovation and pursuing projects. Our challenge has been, what comes first? How do we prioritize, and how do we make sure that we're using the existing employee assets that we have as effectively as possible to meet our customer goals? And I think an enterprise resource planner will help us to be able to get that work done. And then we also are looking at a quality release engineer. This is a position that we haven't had specifically in the district. It's around making sure that every time we release new software for use by the district, that it's gone through a full documented quality release program in a standard way. Next up, energy marketing. We've got a senior energy analyst, again, just a tremendous value out there in the market, in a market which is changing really quickly. And we're feeling that having another senior energy analyst would help us to be able to generate more revenue off of our existing asset base. Earlier this year, we brought to you the proposed low-income program and had discussed there the need for someone to run that program. We think it's about a two-year transitional effort to try to get that going. So we're seeing that as a limited assignment position. And in terms of internal support services, we are seeing a need for, because we have increasing assets, increasing facilities, maintenance positions to be able to take care of that work. We're heading into relicensing for Rock Island, so looking for a licensing specialist. The student human resources is really only a part-time position, probably about a quarter FTE, that just allows us to be able to get some work done, but also it's we have built, I think with the encouragement of the board, built a pretty strong student program here, internship program, allowing more people in Chelan County to get an opportunity to get to know the PUD and potentially think about the PUD as a career opportunity. We haven't had that position in human resources and feeling that it would be advantageous to have it as we really try to promote human resources as a discipline in and of itself that people need to be to develop competency in. There's a total of 14 positions, a couple of which are two-year positions, one of which is a part-time student position. I do want to just note that we have brought to you 14 new positions in the past year, all of which the board has seen. The hydro modernization is the biggest one. This is as we try to address the work at Rock Island and are taking on more of that work that we brought you that in two pieces, the original plan and then the contingency plan in the fall. The fiber expansion acceleration was discussed as well when we made the decision to move forward with acceleration. And then as part of the IT restructure on technology and innovation, we added one management position that has allowed us to bring in a really talented gentleman to help Ian with the very big job that they've got in terms of trying to promote innovation and creativity here. Happy to take any questions on any of that. Hopefully you see the connections to the strategic plan here.
Commissioners, any questions? Well, I guess I've got one, Steve, as it relates to the current hiring environment. Recognizing there's a shortage of applicants for a lot of positions throughout the nation, how comfortable is the senior management team that will be able to find people for all of these positions that fit the bill?
Not comfortable at all would probably be the simplest way of putting it. So we're struggling with the same problems that the entire U.S. labor market, the Washington State labor market is struggling with. We do see less applicants per positions. We see not necessarily as focused on the skill sets that we're looking for. And, you know, we try to provide clear direction that best for most for the longest applies to our hiring as well, that we want to not be satisfied, but we're really trying to get really great people to work here. And in that environment, it does tend to slow things down. So it is a worry for us. It's a big worry for us in terms of how we're going to be able to, or will we be able to accomplish all of our mission with the with what we're seeing in the labor market.
Thank you. Any other questions from commissioners? Since this is a public hearing, I don't know if we're at the end of the public hearing or the presentation yet. If so, I would open it up to any member of the public that might be on the call or in the meeting if there's input desired.
We're actually not at the end yet. So
okay, then we'll wait. We'll wait. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a question, but I think I should wait until the hearing's over because it's specific to the new hirings.
Actually, if you want to do new hires, it's probably good to take it now. Go for it.
Yeah, just a question in terms of need. Anticipating whether we're going to, I don't know whether we're going to have more employees in the future working at home or coming back inside of the operation to work in totality. And if we are going to increase the employees working from home, does that require a different level or a different kind of service from our HR department? And if we can anticipate that, what should we do about it? If we determine that that's not a significant change, then, you know, leave it where it is. So that's kind of a background of my question.
Yeah, there are quite a few hypotheses there.
Yeah.
let me start with the first and most important one. We did a review of our policies on telecommuting. We are doing telecommuting now. Particularly, we went back into doing more telecommuting with the Delta variant, and we have not come out of that yet. Not as much as we were doing back in the spring, but more than we were between June and August, basically. In that review of the telecommuting policy, I decided that we would have as a general rule that we're seeking to allow telecommuting, but as a general basis, not more than one day a week. I will say there's some difference of opinion about that inside the district. There are folks who want to do more than one day a week. And it basically came down to a trade-off between two things. One, productivity in our workplace, creativity, innovation. I just really believe that it is enhanced by having people working together versus recruitment and retention. How much risk do we have with respect to recruitment and retention if we don't allow more telecommuting? So what we are doing is we've made that decision on allowing one day a week, but we are also collecting a lot of data right now. We're trying to get data on the how many people that we are recruiting, does it actually make a real difference to in terms of whether we have a telecommuting policy and how aggressive that telecommuting policy is, and then certainly keeping track of our own retention statistics as well. So that's the policy for now, and that's the way we described it. We said, just like everything else, we're adaptively managing here, and we'll figure it out from there. So I think for that reason, because we've started from there, we haven't gone to the secondary questions you asked about, well, if you were doing more, how would you go about doing it?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, if there are no more, then we'll take it back to Mark, who will finish up the presentation.
All right. Thank you, Steve. So let's pull all of this together with all the numbers that you've seen so far, and this is a slide for our combined district expenditures, summarizing into the different categories that you see before you. You can see overall, as compared to our 2021 budget, this year our total expenditures, $462.3 million, about a 7.8% increase. When you add in our net debt principal payments, as we continue to reduce our debt through those scheduled payments, $46.7 million there. Adding the two of those together, our total expenditures and net debt reduction, $509 million for the year. This is a 5.7% decrease over what we requested last year for our 2021 adopted budget. And again, this is our preliminary 2022 budget as we know today, and we have our second public hearing where we'll continue to do some fine-tuning as we go based on the most recent information to make sure we're giving you the best budget going forward that we know today. So on a previous slide, I had presented our district's combined financial policies for the five-year forecast. This is looking specifically at 2022. Based on the preliminary budget and the numbers that you've seen in this presentation. You can see we are all green, meeting all of our district policy financial metrics, the combined cover of 2.34, and a debt ratio of 20.6% for 2022. And again, we don't anticipate borrowing in 2022. That wouldn't happen based on our forecast until 2023. So looking specifically at our business line financial policies and specific to the 2022 preliminary budget, as you recall in the resolution for our business line financial policies, that was more of a check-in that we presented in our Q3 update today and our quarterly updates going forward, where we look at the measurement date of 2024 and 2029 as we continue to move those businesses towards more sustainability. Looking specifically at 2022, fiber and telecom, you can see we're not quite meeting our target in 2022. There's some shifting of O&M in 2021 out to 2022 related to the fiber make ready work and as well as the fiber portal. On the water side, we are meeting the metrics across the board, but I would note the operating coverage is within 10%, which is why you're seeing yellow on the water target. And then on the wastewater side, not meeting the target, just barely under for the operating coverage percent. And similarly to what I showed earlier at the Q3 presentation, as we look at our cash, definitely in excess of our target, but we do have a debt service as a percent of revenue that's not meeting the target, and that's due to the Peshastin loan that we have right now. So with that, those are our 2022 business line metrics based on what we know today. So our next steps for the budget, as mentioned, we'll continue to review. We'll make some adjustments as we get into the second public hearing. When we get to that hearing on November 15th, we'll highlight what those changes are and what's reflected in that based on what you've seen today. And then we'll come back to the board on December 6th requesting board approval of the 2022 budget. And with that, that concludes the presentation, and I'll open it up to any other additional questions.
Commissioners, any additional questions? If there's no questions, I'd like to invite if there's any member of the public in the meeting to provide any input. I will repeat what I did this morning, that if you do wish to have input, that we would ask that you state your name and your address and limit any comments to 3 minutes. We are recording this. Hearing no public, thank you very much, Mark. Great presentation. There's a lot to that budget.
There is a lot to that budget. That's for sure. We have a lot of work going on right now to support our strategic plan and the strategic goals that we've set out. So, and it's all reflected here in these numbers.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner.
So, Commissioners, our next item of business is our consent agenda. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Mr. Chairman, I move we approve the consent agenda.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Okay, we're on to the regular agenda, and I will turn it over to Steve Wright for Resolution 12.
Okay. So, Agenda Item 12 is a resolution approving bid advertisement, award, and contract signature for hydro generation mechanical site labor, bid number 21-30. And I think it would make sense for us to do Agenda 13 as well, a resolution approving bid advertisement, award, and contract signature for hydro generating unit shop machining, bid number 21-31. Brett Bickford will present.
Good afternoon. This is Brett Bickford, Director of Engineering and Project Management. Our first resolution, bid number 20-30, is to help provide mechanical labor on site to help us with work such as unit disassembly, component inspection and repair, on-site machining, discharge liner work, cavitation repairs, unit assembly, disassembly, unit alignment, and other work on our hydro generating units. This contract will help support us meeting our capital spending plans by having a contingency work crews available. We plan to do a lot of this work with our own crews, but in the case we have other emergency work that comes up, or in some cases work that we don't have the expertise to use, then we can rely on this contract to help support that. The second is for bid 2131 for hydro generating unit shop machining. This project will help support both Rocky Reach and Rock Island Powerhouse 1 work. We have a number of pieces of equipment that as we take them apart, we find that there's work that needs to be done on them that we can't do on site. And so we ship them off to machine shops. And instead of waiting for these parts to come out and then advertising and soliciting and then being able to send these parts off, this contract will be in place and ready. We propose to have to award to not only the low bidder for this, but the second low also. The reason for that is these contracts don't guarantee work, and so there's not a defined schedule. And so in the case that we have some work and the first contractor's not available or their equipment's not is busy, we can then go to the second contractor. We propose also that for the shop machining work, in the event that we have a component that cannot be repaired, that we could have that shop also manufacture components that wouldn't have a value more than $150,000. And again, these two bids are to help support the capital spending plan that's just been presented. And the key to achieving that expenditure is to stay on schedule, and these two contracts can help us get work done as soon as we know that we need it, because these contracts will be in place and ready. The contracts will be ready to go to work. Are there any questions?
Commissioners, any questions for Brett? Thank you, Brett.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, agenda item 14 was a late add. It's a resolution declaring an emergency pursuant to RCW 54-04-070 and 39.04.280, authorizing the general manager to contract for distribution transformers. Chad Risman will make this presentation.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Audio check.
Good.
Thank you. Thanks for hearing this, and thanks for getting this late ad. We're at a spot right now with our distribution transformers. We've got a multi-year contract with a primary vendor, and they are challenged with meeting our expectations of deliveries and delivery dates and in quantities. And we've contacted several other vendors, and there are some capacities. One of the things that's a little bit different about distribution transformers is they're build to order. And it seems like every utility's got slightly different specifications. And so these transformer manufacturers, they essentially do a factory run based on your specifications. We understand through some quoting that there is some limited factory scheduling capabilities with some other vendors. And we'd like to have the opportunity to be able to secure some of those capacities to be able to deliver transformers. So we're looking at probably at least 6 months before these transformers would be delivered to us. But we're concerned this spring and next summer with our inventory levels, and our primary vendor that has been supplying us transformers, as I said, their delivery dates are slipping and their quantities are getting reduced. We're starting to get concerned that this challenge that we're in right now, we're at critically low inventories right now. We have some things in place. We're able to get by, and we're working very closely with customers to try to get us through the next several months, including one of the things that we've identified is there are transformers in our distribution system that are underutilized. or that maybe homes and businesses haven't been connected up to them yet. So we're grabbing a few of those and putting those back into inventory, but that well is only so deep. And that those transformers also will have to be replaced. So to try to diversify, I guess, our vendors a little bit, what we'd like to do is contact them through quotes and try to get some transformers that are layered in addition to the current contract that we're operating on, and give us a little bit of little contingency there to make sure that we can meet our needs over the next year. One of the things that we're considering here is that we're looking at is probably, we use about 150 or so transformers a year. Those are for various reasons. A lot of them are new connections. Some of them are for failures. We really wouldn't want to get to a spot where we were unable to have a transformer available for one that failed for whatever reason in the system, so that we continue service. But we also want to make new connections. So I want to just make sure that these inventory levels are at a spot where we feel comfortable. These transformers, they have a long shelf life. They will get used. The other side of things is the market right now is pretty expensive. They're running about twice as much. So where a unit was somewhere around $2,000 a piece, they're running about $4,000. Significantly more than what our primary contract is for. So we'll probably look at somewhere up to maybe 100 units or so to be layered in over 2022 in addition to our contract. And if our primary vendor situations change, obviously we would want to rely more on the lower cost and the contract that is in place, but we'd like to use this as a contingency. Any questions?
Commissioners, any questions? So, Chad, I guess I would ask the question, is this fall somewhere in the category of the supply chain mess that we're in?
Yeah, and in looking at that specifically, I think we get the same answer that we get when we look in other areas. Part of it is materials, part of it is staffing, getting the raw materials. Part of it is demand. There's a number of things that sound like they're all coming together. And at the end of the day, we've got a few transformers in our yard.
Do most of our transformers come from a domestic source or a foreign source?
Domestic.
Okay. That's a good thing at this moment in time. Gary.
Yes. Hey, Chad, got a question for you. In terms of the size and type that you're discussing, are you discussing the type that goes out on a pole out in a residential neighborhood, or are you discussing a larger sit-on-the-ground type, or perhaps both?
We're looking at mostly pad-mounted transformers that are the size for like a house or a couple of houses. Those are most of the transformers that we use. So transformers that we would deploy in, say, a new development, which are the pad-mounted, the green boxes, we often refer to those as kind of our bread-and-butter transformers. I mean, those are the ones that we use most of. And that's where we're seeing our inventory is getting really low.
Okay, great, thanks.
Any other questions for Chad? Thank you, Chad.
Thank you very much.
Commissioners, we have resolutions 12, 13, and 14. Is there a motion to approve the three?
I would make such a motion.
Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded to approve resolutions 12, 13, and 14. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Agenda item 15, fiber budget revision.
This is one that Bob Shane's going to cover. It's proposed motion moving to revise the fiber system capital budget for the public power benefit fiber expansion by $1.2 million to establish a project budget for the Dry Lake area of Manson, FPD-178 of $1.2 million. Bob, would you like to take a shot at explaining what this is about?
Certainly. Thank you, Steve. Commissioners, so in May of 21, the board approved the PPB acceleration. And in that acceleration scope was this particular build out in Dry Lake, but it was scheduled for a 2023 timeframe. So we pulled it into 2021. And in doing so, we had to do a budget revision, system budget revision to incorporate that project. So at the time, we anticipate a budget revision was likely, but we were uncertain that we would spend all of capital that we had allocated for the year. So we waited until later on the year to see how we were doing on the capital spend. It looks like we'll spend all of the capital we previously had allocated for projects plus this year. So that required a budget revision for the system. But it's within scope of the PPB program. It's part of what you approved under the acceleration. It's one of those expansion areas.
And you're going to put a smile on the face of a bunch of people up in Manson, right?
That is the goal.
So, commissioners, you've heard the rationale. Who would care to make the motion? It's on our agenda. There it is.
I'll make the motion.
Okay.
The following motion. Move to revise the fiber system capital budget for the public power benefit fiber expansion by $1.2 million to establish a project budget for the Dry Lake area of Manson, FDT 178 of $1.2 million.
Is there a second?
Second.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve the fiber budget revision, which is agenda item number 15. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The motion is carried. Thank you, Bob. Manager item, Steve.
We have two today. I want to start off with one from Lacey Stockton. Lacey, take it over.
Thank you. Hi, commissioners. Nice to see you all. Thanks, Rebecca. So I'm going to be introducing a new program called Pay It Forward. You're thinking, what could this be? Well, next slide, please. It's a new way for us to deliver on our mission, improving the quality of life in Chelan County. So the idea is that any commercial or industrial customer who participates in our energy efficiency programs, they now have a choice. They can choose to get a rebate check back, just like they always have, or they can choose to give a portion or all of that rebate check to a local nonprofit organization. Pretty cool. So it's a way for businesses to give. It's a lot easier than perhaps trying to find funding from other sources. And it's easy for us to administer because we're coordinating with the Community Foundation who runs our internal employee giving. So why would we do this? Next slide, please. Well, there's a few reasons, right? It's a straightforward way that we can show our support of the local community and allow other local businesses to do the same. And because it's based off of energy efficiency, our energy efficient program, it's really highlighting our environmental stewardship, right? And it's still providing long-term energy savings to customers who participate while also showing their commitment to the community. And frankly, customers, I think, they appreciate the support of their local community. So we're kind of leading by bringing customers, nonprofits, local businesses together. Our role is one of facilitating and encouraging folks to take advantage of this. And then, sharing when utilities, when customers do. So this program was actually brought to my attention by Scott Stanford, our customer, our commercial energy advisor. Grant PUD runs a similar program. They focus on large industrial customers. And through their program, they have distributed about $250,000 to the local nonprofits there using their community foundation. Umatilla and Hermiston, which are both in Oregon, they do a similar one, again, with large industrial customers. And we just wanted to open this up a little bit wider since we already have the framework for being able to give through community foundation to not just our large users of energy, but also all local businesses who do energy efficient upgrades. Next slide, please. So to the customer, what this will look like is kind of the same as it does right now. They'll go and make an energy efficient improvement. They'll apply for an incentive. And instead of only having the option to get the rebate check or apply it to a contractor, they'll have a third option of forwarding those funds to the community foundation. We have that process already built in through our accounts payable. We already have the form. It's just instead of assigning to a contractor, you're assigning to the community foundation. And then the customer will get a really cool giving card where they can log in and they get to decide which organizations they want to fund. Totally up to them. From our perspective, it's kind of the same process. We get a rebate application, we process it, and we assign that to the community foundation instead of a contractor. And then we hand it off. The community foundation runs these programs just as they do our employee giving program, completely on their own, where they will coordinate with the donor, they coordinate with distributing funds to the nonprofit. They have their own portal where people can select which organizations they want to fund, and they take it from there. So that is the Pay It Forward program.
Commissioners, any comments?
Commissioners, Steve, I'd like to make one quick comment. This is a tremendous creativity shown by Lacey and the team, and really proud of them for the work that they've done here. And I will say they did it completely without my knowledge, which was a good thing, because as a Community Foundation board member, I would need to recuse myself from any discussion of this. And so fortunately, it did not require any work on my part, and they managed to get this into a great place.
Thanks, Steve.
So, Steve, does that mean I can't allow Dennis to say anything about this?
I would think that actually, as a fellow board member, he may want to recuse himself as well.
that was my next
cool idea.
Yeah, I will recuse myself.
It's a cool idea. Yeah.
Yeah, you can see I'm grinning.
Other commissioner comments. Great idea, Steve.
Randy, just to chime in, I appreciate the innovative thinking and work on the work of our staff for the benefit of improving the quality of life in Chelan County. So congratulations and good work.
Thank you.
Any other commissioner thoughts? Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
All right, next up, we have Neil Narotsos. Let me take a second just to introduce this to say, I'm trying to remember whether it was last year. I think it was last year. With respect to COVID, the board was encouraging us to look to find ways to be able to support the community through this really difficult pandemic. And one of the things that we did was to work with the Chelan Douglas Health Authority to come up with a information that could be provided, and that the easiest way to do that for them was through our mailer, because we're already mailing and the cost would be relatively low cost, and we picked up the cost of the printing to do that. They have come back to us and asked us if we would do that again, and want to share with you the material. I apologize, it did just go out to you as board members at 9 o'clock this morning, so hopefully you saw it. If not, check your 902 email. And with that, Neil, I'll turn it over to you.
Great. Neil Naruzzo, Communications Manager. There you see in front of you the flyer that Rebecca sent out earlier today. And as Steve mentioned, we've been approached by the Chelan Douglas Health District to include this in our newsletter. This would be in the November, December newsletter that will go out in the next couple of weeks. As Steve said, it's consistent with what we did in 2020. As you remember, we allocated funds for this kind of support, and we still have remaining funds available to help with this effort. As Steve said, there's really not a lot of cost. There's no additional postage cost to put this in with our existing mailer. There's some in-house printing that would be involved. The information, as you can see, focuses largely on pregnancy and vaccines, the availability of booster shots for those who qualify, and vaccinations for those that are 12 or older. So if there are any questions or concerns, I can take them now, but otherwise we'll continue to move forward.
Hi, this is Ann Congdon. I'm looking for that right now. I don't see that email, Steve.
It came in.
It should be from Rebecca at 902.
Is it in my PUD? Would it be on my PUD tablet, or is it in my personal email?
Should be in your, should be PUD. Let me just check and make sure. Went to the board.
It came in on PUD 1 at 9 o'clock, 902.
It was addressed. It was to the board of commissioners, so it would have been to your Chelan PUD email address.
Yeah, I don't have it.
I will forward it again.
Would you do that? Yeah. Yeah, it's not here. Okay, thank you.
I got mine.
So any other questions I can answer here right now?
Let me just check, Commissioner Congdon. The material is what was on the screen a moment ago. Neil, maybe you could put it back up for a moment just to make sure that she sees that. And then I have forwarded it just now to
Rebecca, could I get your help with that?
Is that visible to you, Commissioner Congdon?
Yes, it is. So the proposal is to take this particular little flyer and put it in with our newsletter?
Yes.
When will that go out? Or when's it proposed to go out?
This would go out in the next 2 weeks. It just needs to be finalized and printed and go to the mailhouse.
Yeah, I want to give this some more. I want to look at this more carefully. I don't think I'm going to support this personally, but thanks.
Okay. Any other concerns?
Great. Well, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. That's it for manager items.
All right. Lisa, commission travel.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
We only have two more events this year. We have the November Waputo meetings that are virtual only. And Commissioner Arsenault let me know today that the Waputo Annual Conference will be virtual only as well. Is there anyone who plans to attend that?
Both of them. If they're virtual, mm-hmm. I'll be at both of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Commissioner Bowles, both?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, say both of them again.
I'll let McKenna.
Lisa, tell me those two again. My mind had departed for a moment.
November 17 is the Waputo Association meeting, and December 1 through 3 is the annual conference.
Yes and yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Congdon?
And Lisa.
Oops, sorry.
Yes.
You already have me down for both. I just want to confirm that, yes, I am attending both.
Thank you.
And that November, there's actually 2 days, aren't there, Wednesday and Thursday, not counting the Friday board meeting?
I'll have to double check.
I believe that's correct, Commissioner Smith. I just got the email on that scheduled today.
Yeah, so, but I'll be attending the virtual meetings. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. So I think so, I've heard from everyone but Commissioner Congdon. Maybe she spoke already.
She did. She said yes.
To both?
No, I didn't. I will let you know.
Okay.
On those. I said that. I guess I think I was drowned out or I didn't have an, I don't know what happened here. But I'll let you know for sure.
Okay.
Thanks, Lisa.
And I've started the travel document for 22, so I'll be sending that out soon.
Good.
Is there anything else I can help with?
I think we're good.
Okay.
Thank you. So do we have any commissioner items? We don't. Do we have a follow-up on delegation of action items from previous meetings? None?
Yeah, I'm sorry. We had none from the last meeting, and we had one that came from a previous board meeting, and Bob Shane provided information on the current cost per premise per mile. So hopefully you had received
right.
that.
He did a really nice job on that. Very nice job.
He did. Yeah.
It was thorough. It was understandable. It just clarified a lot of things for me, and I appreciate it.
Okay, do we have any delegation of items from this meeting?
I did not capture any. Rebecca, did you capture any?
The only one I captured is that I would order 5 copies of the book, The Fearless Organization, for commissioners.
Okay. That being said, is there any additional public comment? Hearing none, are there any matters that necessarily need to come before the commission before we go into executive session for approximately 1 hour? Well, I'll stop there for the moment. Is there any other matters that come before the commission? In that case, we are in need of an executive session for approximately an hour following a 5-minute break to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party and or legal risks as authorized by the RCWs. So we'll all need to sign out and sign back in on the executive session line in about 5 minutes.